Earlier this week, the president signed the National Defense Authorization Act.
A radical new claim of presidential power.
It gives the military the power to indefinitely detain American citizens suspected, not convicted, of some sort of involvement or affiliation with terrorism.
A bill that allows U.S. citizens to be transported overseas to prisons and held there without charges filed.
Senators John McCain and Carl Levin are looking to make America into a military state and give the president the power to be judge, jury, and executioner.
When President Obama signed the NDAA, sections of the bill were opposed by key members of his administration. Many civil liberties activists believe the law is unconstitutional.
There is one thing and one thing only that is protecting American citizens, and that's our Constitution.
Is a baseball stadium more important than liberty? Are liquor licenses more important than due process?
Please know what will come your way. Death, attention, prosecution.
It is time to stand, to peacefully bring about a revolution.
One day, somebody's going to have to say enough.
Indeed, one day someone is going to have to say enough. Welcome to the Panda Report. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, founder and national director of People Against the NDAA. My co-host, James Dysart, has not called in yet, so we're waiting a little bit on him. Today is July 7th, 2013, and you can check us out online, streaming live at freedomizerradio.com. Again, that's live at freedomizerradio.com. And you can also call in and talk to our guest, ask questions of our guest this evening at 347-324-3704. That's 347-324-3704. Our guest today is Robbie Wells. He's a presidential candidate. We'll get to him in a couple minutes, and we're going to have an excellent interview, ask him a few questions, and talk a little bit about his campaign, his aspirations, and as always, we are not afraid to ask the hard questions. So we are glad to have him on the show, and we're going to dive into a little bit of anti-NDAA updates and news. We talked a little bit about on last show that the Alaska bill against the NDAA, House Bill 69 or HB 69, had been signed to law last week. And we talked a lot about how it does nothing to protect the rights of the people. That final report on the Alaska anti-NDAA legislation being heralded around the country as something that will protect the rights of the people, the final analysis of that is now available on pandaunite.org. Take a look at the front page. Right now, the Panda Unite website is going through some transition, so you may not be able to grab that in particular. But you also will, you'll be able to grab it. Hopefully, it'll be back up by tomorrow. But that is now available on the website. Secondly, we have forged some relationships with a few key players in the Liberty Movement. One of those key players is Storm Clouds Gathering. Now, for those of you who don't know, Storm Clouds Gathering is a YouTube personality. Has got about 12 million views on his YouTube channel. Very, very popular with the Liberty Movement. And he just released a video called Revolution, an Instruction Manual. And now, we talk about revolution all the time on the show, and I'm sure that there are some people who think that revolution may be too strong of a word to use. But a revolution is a complete and total change of the current system. And that's what we need in America today, is a revolution. So I highly recommend anyone out there to go check out Storm Clouds Gathering's Revolution and Instruction Manual, because it goes through the psychology of a revolution. It goes through the different pillars of a revolution. And it's not too long of a video. It's about 15 minutes. But it's well worth your time. And he'll recommend some reading, including The Crowd, including several others, that I would highly, highly recommend looking into. Also on the anti-NDAA front, July 15th, in Oregon, there will be a town hall that you can find the information on the Panda YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/PandaUniteTV. but we will be posting that information on the Facebook page and on the website very shortly. July 15th, we will be holding a citizens town hall in Oregon. I forget whether it's Eugene or Coos Bay, but I believe it's Coos Bay, Oregon. We'll be holding a citizens town hall. I will be there talking about the National Defense Authorization Act and the dangers that we face as a country and as people, and the dangers that the NDAA poses to us as a country. And several other big, big events coming up. Also, United We Stand Fest. Do not forget about United We Stand Fest. We talked about it a couple times on here. The date was moved because they got some new artists and some new talent for the United We Stand Fest coming up here in October. But the United We Stand Fest, featuring such artists like Saving Abel, Tatiana Moroz, Golden State, and several others, including Ziggy Marley. I will be speaking, Panda will be co-sponsoring the United We Stand Fest in October of this year, so keep an eye out, and as soon as we've got the date, we'll let you know, and you can mark your calendars for October. With all that being said, my co-host still not having joined the program, I'll carry on and soldier on myself. We have with us this evening presidential candidate Robbie Wells. Robbie Wells has been a public servant for over 20 years, serving as a teacher, football coach, and a member of the Army National Guard. He was adopted at birth and grew up in the southeastern part of the country as the son of a Baptist minister. He is the most successful coach at Savannah State in the past decade. During his time at the university, he was host of the Robbie Wells Coach Show, which aired on the regional NBC affiliate in southeast Georgia. He has also been recognized as one of the top motivational speakers in America and the keynote speaker at several national conventions, school assemblies, civic organizations, and etc. around the country. In 1990, he earned his bachelor's degree from Furman University in health and exercise science, and during his time there, he was a member of the football team that won the 1998 IAA National Championship. I have no idea what any of that means. I'm sure he'll explain. In 2000, Robbie Wells earned his master's degree from the University of South Carolina in adult education. In 2006, he joined the Army National Guard during the middle of the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, and joined at the age of 38. Earlier in his career, he had the privilege of serving as an assistant coach at Benedict College, South Carolina State University, and the University of South Carolina. He currently resides in Charlotte, North Carolina. He also has a marketing business based in Charlotte that employs college students from the local schools. Mr. Wells, welcome to the Panda Report.
Dan, it's great to be here today, and it's great to be able to speak to all the listeners that have tuned in to Panda today.
Yeah, absolutely, and our audience has been growing, especially after we had Restore the Fourth on here. Their national organizer was on here last week, and I'm not sure how familiar you are with them, but they're a grassroots group that's been doing some very, very good work. Held a national protest on July 4th, about 20,000 people across the country. Now, we've got a while to go with Egypt. 33 million, 20,000, we're getting there.
Yeah, you're exactly right. You're exactly right.
But besides that, so kind of jumping right into things here, why are you running for president? That's probably the easiest question that you'll get tonight, but why are you running for president? Why would you pick up your bootstraps and run for president?
Dan, I've known since a very young age, since I was about 8 years old, that I was one day going to run for president. My adopted father, who was a Baptist minister when I was a young child, worked for Jimmy Carter when he was the governor of Georgia. And not that I agree with Jimmy Carter on his principles or his philosophy, but he is or was a family friend at the time. And I saw Jimmy Carter as a very young child. I watched him go from being a peanut farmer to being the governor of Georgia to being the president of the United States. And it really struck with me that you do not have to be a lawyer. You can go on with your profession, with whatever it is that you love. And then when it comes time to serve your country, as our founding fathers set it in place, as they intended it, then you go and you serve. And that's what I'm doing. I'm stepping to the plate right now in a crucial time in the history of our country when I believe that we need truly strong leadership from a president that has thick skin and a backbone that will not bow down to the special interest groups and the lobbyists that have been plaguing Washington for many years. A president that is going to restore the liberties and the freedoms back to the people. How? By pushing to repeal the USA Patriot Act and the National Defense Authorization Act. You need a president that's going to bring jobs back to America so that this economy can once again flourish, so that, families, moms and dads, can actually take care of their family again. You deserve a president that is going to push for energy independence. These are all things that are part of my platform, and I believe that it's time that one of we the people steps forward. It was Thomas Jefferson that wrote the Declaration of Independence. It took him about 17 days to write it, but I believe that we're at a point in history in this country where we the people need to come together and author in a new document entitled the Declaration of Restoration.
Okay. So I like that concept. So let's go into that concept a little bit. What would, in your mind, I know the Founding Fathers, when they brought together the Constitutional Convention, there were many great minds there, and they had several differing opinions. But in your mind, what would a restoration of independence look like? What would it touch on? What would the grievances be thrown out the Founding Fathers had several grievances that they brought to the king? What is this restoration of independence?
Well, very similar to back in those times. I believe that we're in a time when we the people need to come together and say, hey, look, we're being taxed too much. That's one thing that I like about the Tea Party. They believe they're taxed enough already. So I believe that we've got to move away from a federal income tax, which is also part of my platform. I'd like to see us move to a tariff system, which is what our Founding Fathers intended for us. I'd like to, as I said, see the liberties and freedom restored to the people of the United States so they can truly be free, so they can truly have liberty by overturning, repealing, if you would, the USA Patriot Act and the National Defense Authorization Act. And, of course, both of these acts are completely against what the United States is all about. Takes away from our Fourth Amendment right to due process. The National Defense Authorization Act, just by the word of the president, the federal government can come in and pluck you up out of your home right now without any sort of due process and hold you indefinitely, and you would never even see your family again. So that's some things that have got to change and that I will tirelessly work on as president of the United States to make sure it does get changed.
Okay. And that also brings up a interesting point. You talk about being plucked out of your house without due process, without a charge, without a trial. Obviously, that's what this organization is about stopping. But what are some thoughts that you've had about the Watertown, Massachusetts situation, where 9,000 law enforcement officers assisted the military in going house to house and searching each home one by one on the block of Watertown looking for a criminal. What are your thoughts on that situation?
It is very dangerous to see this happen and to see where most Americans, when this was going on, was like, yeah, come on in. You can search my house. That's fine. Let's find this guy. I think it's really dangerous. I think that we need to stay within the confines of what our Founding Fathers wanted, and that's not it. So we've just got to do a better job of returning it. We've already gone down the slippery slope, especially since September 11th, 2001. So anyway, that's part of my stance on that.
Okay. And that makes sense, and that's something that was very interesting about that situation. Is a lot of people now cite the Posse Comitatus Act. They'll say, oh, well, Posse Comitatus was violated. And Posse Comitatus, or the authority to conjure a posse, conjure a group of people to engage in law enforcement, they restricted the military from doing that, essentially. Except it was changed a little bit There's a lot of noise going on in the background there, sir. Sir, I can't hear you. There's a lot of noise going on in the background. You still there?
I'm here.
Okay. All right, good. So back, essentially, they carved out an exception for weapons of mass destruction. And that was one of the things that was used in the Boston situation, was weapons of mass destruction, that they called the pressure cooker a weapon of mass destruction. That's how they were able to bring the military in. Now, before that, it was Dorner. And they used Dorner as an excuse to search in Big Bear Lake, California, a town of 3,000 people. They did house-to-house, warrantless searches. So in light of Dorner's incident, in light of Boston, do you see this becoming more of a trend, or is it just kind of a spike in fear in the populace and it's going to go back down and we're not going to continue down that path?
Well, we hope it's just a spike in the fear. But if we do not have a president that will come in and say, hey, wait a minute, we're going down the wrong path, then it will become a trend. That's why we've got to elect someone this time that will get us back to the conservative values of following three basic documents. You know, of course, I've got the football background. Whenever we came up short in a contest, we would always go back to practice, and we'd say, we've got to get back to the drawing board. We've got to get back to the basics, the basic fundamentals. Well, the basic fundamentals for our nation is to follow three documents, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the Declaration of Independence. That's what I'm going to be following. There's two questions I'm going to ask as president. Number one, is it constitutional? Number two, is it for the betterment of the people of the United States? That's the questions that I'll ask on any decision that I make. I believe that's the type of president that we are going to have to make sure that we do restore liberty and freedom to the people.
I agree. I'm concerned about the second question. The first question, absolutely, is it constitutional? How do you differentiate, or how do you work out, obviously, the betterment of the people is a noble goal. Yet we have seen time and time again, society and country after country, and people after people, destroyed by a person who wanted to bring about the common good. And so, how do you kind of separate that second question from the common good, or how do you work that out with the Constitution?
Well, I believe that when you look at things, if it is constitutional, it's kind of killing two birds with one stone. If it's constitutional, most likely it is for the betterment of the people of the United States. But you've got to be able to ask those questions because you do not want to proceed if it's not constitutional. So really it's just one question.
Okay.
Is it constitutional?
Awesome. And we do need to have a president that starts looking at that, because a perfect example, there was an interview with Piers Morgan was interviewing, I'm sure you love Piers Morgan, and our good buddy Piers Morgan was interviewing a former director of the CIA, and he asked, and Piers Morgan asked this question, I was so surprised, Piers Morgan asked the question, well, you know, let me read you the Fourth Amendment. He read in the Fourth Amendment. He says, okay, now, is it constitutional what you're doing? And the director's like, well, it's a balance of liberty and security. No, I already know that. Is it constitutional? And the CIA director's, he refuses to answer the question. He eventually calls it legal. And that is one of the reasons that constitutional needs to be the answer, or needs to be the question. And I completely concur with that. Now, since at least Bush Sr., we've seen a government that has grown larger and larger and continues the same policies, really, no matter what party or which president is in office. In fact, the protections of our liberties have been disappearing faster and faster with each new president and new promise. I mean, the current president of the United States, when he was running for office, promised no more warrantless wiretapping. Broken promises. So, what makes you, the trend I see is almost like a straight line, less liberty, less freedom, next president, doesn't matter which party. And the independent that we've had in this, the independents we had in the Senate are, so far, Senator Lieberman, who he created the Department of Homeland Security, and Bernie Sanders, who's not exactly, he's a better friend to liberty than Lieberman. He's not a terrible friend to liberty either. And so what makes you different, and what do you hope to change overall by, let's say you get two terms, let's say you get the maximum amount of time in the presidency, what do you hope to change, and what makes you different than the people who come and promise the American people one thing and never deliver?
Well, it's funny that you say that. In pretty much all of my speeches, Dan, I talk about how America is ready for a president that is going to say what he means and mean what he says. Because we've got so many that will give lip service. They'll talk out both sides of their mouth, and that's what we call it down here. They'll tell you one thing, and then they'll go do something exactly the opposite. In fact, we've got some liberty-minded folks right now that say they're liberty-minded that are actually in Washington that do just that. They'll talk a good game, but then when it comes to actually voting in Congress or in the Senate, they don't stand up for true liberty. So,
like who?
You've got a bunch of them that do that. The fact that you've got Rand Paul that voted for the 2013 amendment to the National Defense Authorization Act, and then he wants to turn around and actually filibuster against it. Where I come from, that's called talking out of both sides of your mouth. And you know, I would love to have the opportunity to debate him on that. But one thing I will say about this: while all of my potential competitors are thinking about running for president, I am running for president of the United States, because these are drastic times, and drastic times mean that we've got to take drastic measures. You're not talking to somebody that's got a weak backbone here. You're talking to a guy that coached football for many years, that's been put in a pressure cooker situation, which I think has truly prepared me, because I've got the strategic skills to go and be able to do some things and not really worry so much about playing politics to keep my job. I'll be more worried and concerned about doing my job and making sure that Americans have jobs.
Good answer. By the way, the call-in number for this evening, if you guys want to call in and ask this presidential candidate, our guest on the line, a question, the call-in number is 347-324-3704. That's 347-324-3704. And I definitely want to give you a chance to go a little bit more in detail about what you plan to do up in Washington. However, we're coming up on a ad break, and so our sponsors don't kick us off the air. We kind of do like to stay around. We do have to roll into an advertisement, and we'll be back right after the break with this presidential candidate, Robbie Wells. You are listening to the Panda Report on FreedomizerRadio.com.
You are listening to Freedomizer Radio, where freedomizers freedomize freedom.
Hello everyone, Proof here again. I want to let you know about our brand new sponsor, Silver Leaf Tea. Now, as you guys know that have listened to me for years, I am a tea aficionado. I have hundreds of different flavors and styles at my house, and Silver Leaf has exactly the kind of stuff that I look for. I love loose tea, great antioxidants. I just love the taste of it, and this Silver Leaf has black, they have green, they have white, they have organic. Great for hot tea and iced tea. Silver Leaf Tea, it's right on our website, freedomizerradio.com. And check it out and order it. Silver Leaf Tea.
You know the Constitution like the back of your hand. You've read books, listened to podcasts, attended lectures, surfed websites, and watched videos. You've made liberty your life's goal. But something seems to be missing. Stickers from libertystickers.com. Exercise your freedom of speech with the world's most dangerous bumper stickers. That's libertystickers.com. But wait, There's more. You can buy Liberty stickers wholesale. Get them for 99 cents each when you put 100 or more in your shopping cart in any combination. Sell them or give them away. They're great for gun shows, flea markets, fairs, outreach, and more. Earn extra money, promote freedom, and spread the word. Need custom stickers, labels, or decals for your organization or business? Liberty Stickers makes them. Go to libertystickers.com to order or call 877-873-9626. libertystickers.com. The world's most dangerous stickers. Get ready for the epic new documentary adventure ride of your life. Shade, the motion picture. A view into the globalist domain. And Embellus and Burma's film.
Nothing in this world works the way you think it does. Nothing. Governments do not operate the way you think they do. Banks do not do what you think they do. The police department is not here for what you think it is. Nothing in your world works the way you think it does.
We have to let them know that their world government has been identified, and they thought they just clawed the world economy, bring in a worldwide police state, but instead, it's going to bring them down.
You have to stand up. Speak up. Speak out.
See the motion picture. Order your copy of the DVD today at SheeTheMotionPicture.com.
Greetings, this is Blake the Eccentric, and I want to invite you to check out my new show on Freedomizer Radio, The Eccentric Perspective. It's sort of a red pill, blue pill, going down the rabbit hole kind of show, featuring outside-the-box politics, philosophy, and gonzo journalism. But be warned, with knowledge comes responsibility, and you might not see the world the same way again. As I will attempt to open your mind, speak to your common sense, and challenge your critical thinking skills. So please join me Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday from noon to 1:30 Pacific Time. Once again, that's Eccentric Perspective, only on Freedomizer Radio.
You are listening to Freedomizer Radio, where freedomizers freedomize freedom.
All right, welcome back to the Panda Report, People Against the NDAA, hosts this every Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific. You can listen to archives of episodes of this show at pandaunite.org. That's pandaunite.org. Listen live to this show at freedomizerradio.com every week at Sunday night. And the call-in number for this show is 347-324-3704. Press 1 to ask our guest a question. That's 347-324-3704. Our guest tonight, presidential candidate Robbie Wells, talking about his run for president, his plans for the country. And we talked a little bit about his declaration of restoration. I like it. All right, jumping into another question. So former Congressman Ron Paul ran for president as a Republican and mentioned the reason he did was there was no way to win as a third-party candidate. Talked about that on the Jay Leno show. Now, what makes you different, and how do you think you can win as an independent?
Well, Dan, that's an excellent question. What I will say is this. I am an independent thinker, and as I've been going around the country, I've been in 26 states in the 27 states now. I forgot about Kansas. We just got to Kansas this past week. But I've been in 27 states this past year, and what I will tell you is there are a lot of independent thinkers out here. Realistically, I'm probably going to end up going with a party. We have been courted. When I say we, I'm talking about the campaign team. We have been courted by several small parties as well as the Republican Party. And we'll make a determination probably within the next 3 to 4 months whether we need to continue this race as an independent or whether we actually need to seek the nomination of a party.
Okay. So you're leaving the door open for working with a party.
Dan. I am completely leaving that door open because I understand that we've got to get a president sitting in that Oval Office that has the right attitude. You see, attitude does not start at the bottom and work its way up. Attitude starts at the top of any business, any organization, any team, any government. It starts at the top and it permeates its way throughout the entire organization. So if we've got the right attitude sitting behind that desk in the Oval Office, then that will permeate throughout the entire country. Here's another thing that I'm going to be pushing for. I'll be pushing for government reform, term limits as well. I'm also going to be pushing for a balanced budget, and I will challenge Congress that if they do not provide a balanced budget, that they will give up their salary until it actually is. I believe that America needs a president that's going to do that. That's one of the main problems we've got right now. It's not the only problem, but we've got to get this under control.
So you would be in favor of limiting the salary of Congress were they not to be able to pass a budget?
Exactly. And I wouldn't mind going on TV and just letting the people know, as the president can, standing up on that soapbox and saying, hey, your local or your state representatives, your state senators have not done their job. They haven't given a balanced budget. So I'm saying that we shall give up our salary until we come up with one. And I've also vowed this to the American people. I've also vowed that once I become president, I will be taking half my salary and giving it back to the educational system across the country, dividing it up across the states. And I will challenge Congress to do exactly the same thing. And I believe they can afford it, considering the fact that just last year, the net worth of Congress was a little bit over $2.2 billion with a B. They've got plenty of money.
Now, Amendment 27 of the U.S. Constitution says no law varying the compensation for the services of senators and representatives shall take effect unless an election of representatives shall have intervened. So how do you plan on going about limiting the salary of Congress?
I'm just gonna put it out there that they should give it up. I'm just gonna let it be known. If you're not gonna do your job, why should you take a salary for it?
Okay. Good. So why run as an independent in the first place? If you're leaving the door open for parties, why would you run as an independent in the first place?
Well, basically, Dan, I've always been a guy that's gone against the grain. I've always been one that kind of went against the current. So running as an independent, it just seemed like a natural progression for me. Now, again, we are gaining support across this country. Dan, we've got people in 45 states now working on this campaign. And I want to give the people of this country an option. Other than a multimillionaire that's running like you normally see. I want to give the American people a true option for one of we the people, somebody that has understood what it means to have a good job and then lose it and have absolutely nothing. You see, I've been there. Somebody that is considered to be middle class and below, because that's me. I'm not a multimillionaire. Someone that wakes up every morning wondering how he's going to provide for his family. Someone that feels like their American dream has been stolen from them and replaced with an economic nightmare. You see, I'm just like that. Back in 1860, and I love to look at history because history repeats itself, but in 1860, the people of the United States elected an underdog to be the president of the United States, and that was Abraham Lincoln, who went to Washington and pushed for the passage of the 13th Amendment, which abolished slavery, of course. I venture to say here in 2016, history can repeat itself by electing me as the underdog candidate to go be the president of the United States so that I can go to Washington and push for legislation that will once and for all break the chains of enslavement that are on each and every one of us as American citizens because of this economic system that we're in.
Okay. Now, you mentioned breaking the chains of the economic system. What do you mean? What chains do you see on the economic system that are holding the American people down?
Well, we've got a money system that's broken because of the unconstitutional Federal Reserve. I would like to see a full audit of the Federal Reserve. And then after it's fully audited and the people of the United States understand what it is, I would like to see Congress take back sovereign control of our money system, which is what Article 1, Section 8 says anyway. I believe that that will help us in a major way. I would like to see us move to fair trade over the free trade. I would like to see NAFTA repealed. We've lost 4.5 million jobs in the last 15 years because of NAFTA. In fact, it was Ross Perot that warned us about it before NAFTA took place, and he was exactly right. So I would like to see NAFTA repealed, bring back these manufacturing jobs, raise the tariffs on goods that are coming into this country so that companies can actually compete and afford to make those products right here in the United States.
Understood. All right. Well, we've got a caller. Area code 503, if you could state your name and where you're from.
Oh, hi, Dan. This is James. Sorry, I couldn't get in there before. I'm sorry.
My co-host has joined us. Well, come on, James.
Sorry about that.
All right, cool. Just in time. I want to kind of shift gears a little bit from the presidential side of things to something that you've been fairly heavily involved with recently. You recently spoke at POW Bowie Bergdahl's big event in Kansas City. And for those of us who aren't really familiar with this man's story, can you give a good overview? Who is this guy? How long has he been held? Why, over all of our other soldiers who are in trouble, like Sergeant Tenna, are you focusing on Sergeant Bergdahl?
Well, I'm focusing on Bo Bergdahl simply because Bo laid it on the line for you and for me and for everybody else across this country, and he is an active POW right now being held in Afghanistan by Taliban forces. Our current administration knows where he is, but for whatever reason, our current administration is not doing what they need to do in order to get him. I have vowed to Bo, to the Bergdahl family, to the military, to the veterans, and to the people of the United States, that if our current administration will not do what they are supposed to do in bringing Bo Bergdahl home, that on my first day in office, I will be taking steps to bring Bo Bergdahl home as quickly as we possibly can.
Now, a little bit more detail. Who is this guy? What? Where was he when he was captured? Let's give our audience a little bit more detail on who this person is.
Well, Bo was captured when he was a private. It was June the 30th, 2009. He has been in captivity for a little over 4 years now, going into his fifth year that he is being held by Taliban forces, where he has been tortured. His life has been put on the line, where he thought, of course, several times that they were going to behead him, the whole nine yards. His family has begged the Taliban forces that have him to please keep him alive, which they have. Now they're using him to kind of make a trade. I will say this now, Dan. You have not probably heard very much about Bo Bergdahl in the national media. I've been talking about Bo for months now. In any speech that I give, in any interview that I give, I have been talking about bringing this young man home. Now, all of a sudden, about a week and a half ago, NBC and CBS broke stories saying that a spokesman for the Taliban is ready, that the Taliban forces are ready to negotiate for this POW's release. You're not hearing anything from Washington, though, as far as this is concerned. And, you know, we have a good senator from the state of Arizona. If anybody should be standing up and down on the table, jumping up and down on the table to bring this young man home, it should be the senator from Arizona, who was also a POW at one point in time.
Yeah, I
you mean John Duquesne. McCain, sorry.
Yeah. I was going to say, because unfortunately, I don't think that any help is going to be coming from that area, because John McCain was actually
the one in this Congress that blocked getting home his fellow POWs in the 1970s in Congress, and a lot of vets hate his guts for it. It's really ugly what he did. As soon as he got back, he blocked it so they couldn't get their other guys home.
Guys, let me just say this. Right is right. Wrong is wrong. Right does not hurt anybody. It might make someone mad at times, but it does not hurt anyone. This family, the Bergdahl family, is being hurt right now. This young man needs to be brought home. I will do the right thing, even if it is not politically expedient. You can rest assured that I am going to make decisions based on what I truly believe is right. I live by three rules, guys, three very simple rules. The first rule is two words, do right, because if I'm doing right, I can't do wrong. Once again, right is right, wrong is wrong, right does not hurt anyone. Rule number two, do my very best. You see, if I'm doing my very best in whatever job I'm doing or whatever relationship I'm in or whatever the case may be, then it goes back to rule number one, I'm doing right. And then rule number three, treat other people the way you want to be treated. Imagine if Bo Bergdahl was your son. Imagine if you were Bo Bergdahl, okay?
Yeah.
How would you want to be treated? Once again, rule number three, better known as the golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you, goes back to rule number one, which is do right. So it's really just one simple little rule. It's just do right. Does that mean I'm a perfect person? No, I'm not. I am a human being. I've got my frailties. I've made my mistakes. But at the same time, the right thing is to bring this young man home.
Right.
Now, I'm not personally familiar, although I probably should be. I studied detention and indefinite detention and military trials enough. I'm not particularly familiar with the all the officers that go into bringing a man like that home. Are we talking a special operations drop? Are we talking negotiating a prisoner settlement? What actions does would you as president take? You're talking about your first day in office taking some actions. Well, Barack Obama talked about his first day in office taking some actions to close Guantanamo. And his action, and he did, his action was to sign an executive order saying, I'll really think about closing Guantanamo. and lo and behold, Guantanamo's still open. So what's the
reaction? Well, he signed the order. He signed the order, and then he didn't enforce it.
Well, the order essentially said, hey, I'll think about it. But so what specific actions, if you were to be, because one of the things Romney was criticized on a lot was he kept talking about this, I want to say it was a five-point economic plan. Got this five-point economic plan, he pitched everywhere he went. And people said, you know, he's got 5 points, but nobody really even knows what they are. What is he actually going to do? Is he going to save the economy with a five-point economic plan? Hoo-ah! And not to say that we as Panda do not endorse candidates anywhere in any way, shape, or form. But we're more than happy to hand out heat in the fire on constitutional things. But as far as that's concerned, what specific actions would you take on your first day in office to bring him up?
Well, first of all, the Taliban forces, that is not a nation. We, you know, the war on terror, per se, we are not in a true war, because to be in a true war, you have to go against a sovereign nation. So we've got to look back at Thomas Jefferson. When he sent the mercenaries out to fight off and to bring to justice the pirates off the Barbary Coast. I don't know if you guys have studied that, but you may want to go back and look at that. I would kind of do the same thing. We could do the same thing with the bad guys, per se, or the terrorists, per se. So the people holding him, in my opinion, my humble opinion, that is not a sovereign nation, so we got to go get him.
So that would consist of essentially, we dealt with the Barbary pirates. He turned the military, go get him. And
that's a good extraction.
I'm assuming, that would it would be a extraction move. Am I incorrect in that assumption?
You're exactly right. Now I don't want to get into too much because. Once
right.
I am elected, I don't want to give away everything that we're going to do, but I'm going to tell you this right now.
Right. Yeah, you're going to go from the left wall and the first guy is going to climb at 08800 hours.
let me just say this. Let me just say this for the thugs that are holding him. May God have mercy on him if he's still captive when I become president, because I'm not going to have any on him.
Robbie, I was wondering, related to that, what's your feeling on this, and what would you do about the, I mean, I think I know already, but what's your feeling, what would you do about funding Al-Qaeda, or the people we're supposedly at war with, and as well as the Muslim Brotherhood, the other people who we're supposed to be at war with, kind of, but we're funding and putting in our positions in our White House and stuff. We've got a few. I think one of them's in Homeland Security. I mean, to me, that just seems like blatant treason and destroys the entire what I deem a facade of the quote unquote war on terror. It seems like the only terror they're waging is on American people with the NDAA and drone strikes and taking away liberties. But what's your feeling on that?
Well, yeah, I completely agree, and you know, it's really sad to see how our government is at the point now where they're actually turning on our own people. So we've got to reel this back in and get it under control, which is what I plan on doing when I do become president.
Now, let's lay out this scenario. Let's say you become president, and I'm assuming your inauguration would cost quite a bit less than the most recent president's, costing taxpayers at least a cool $300 million-ish. I'm assuming your inauguration would be a little more conservative with the cash. But you get the inauguration, and you enter your first day in the White House, and you have a black book, you have a calendar, and you have 30 days. The first 30 days of your presidency. So
we're
the first
go.
30 days of your presidency, what are five things that you'd really want to do in the first 30 days? That, you know, if you could, what were five things?
Well, here's the main thing that we're going to do in the first 30 days. We're going to go through all those executive orders, and we're going to repeal them, toss them in the garbage can. The unconstitutional executive orders that are there, you know, executive orders are actually put in place simply so that the president could tell people that were working in the White House, okay, it's your job to take out the trash at the end of the day. It's your job to make sure mm-hmm. that the desks are straight, this, that, and other. It was never meant to actually be a situation where they actually made law with it, or what seems to be law. So we're going to go through those and strike out all these unconstitutional executive orders and return it to what it's supposed to be. And that's going to take some time, guys. That's going to take a lot of time. We didn't get in this mess overnight, and it's going to take some time to get out of this mess. I'm going to push for all the unconstitutional federal departments that are in place to be defunded and shut down as well. I'm not saying they're bad departments, some of them, but if it's not covered in the Constitution, I'm a huge Tenth Amendment guy. Let's just give it back to the states and let the states do with these departments what they want to do with them. We're going broke paying for things we shouldn't be paying for anyway.
Yeah. Hey, Robbie, I agree completely, but there's something in the news now, and it's been going on for a while, and once in, popping up its head once in a while, but in the mainstream news. But they've been covering where FEMA is and Obama and DHS is working with foreign countries' troops, including Russia, for quote-unquote emergency management scenarios. What would you do about the see, to me, that's flat-out treason to me, but what do you think about that, and what would you do about these getting these foreign troops in these free trade zones where we have China, we're selling plots of our land to China and Russia all over. We've got over 240 of them already, one in Idaho.
You're exactly right with your feelings on that. It was George Washington that warned us of these foreign entanglements, whether it be on
right.
our soil or other soil, or, you know, foreign soil. So mm-hmm. I would like to get us out of being the police of the world, which is what we are today. We've got to start taking care of our own backyard. We're giving away $50 billion a year in foreign aid, but yet we've got 39 million Americans living in poverty. We've got millions of veterans that are homeless and unemployed, and yet we've got, as you say, foreign troops on our own soil. We've got to get them off of our soil, and then we've just got to get back to being a true sovereign nation where we do not answer to anyone but us.
I agree.
Agreed. Now, interesting. You take an interesting path in order to bring change around this country, because today many people, and in a lot of cases for good reason, have lost faith in the electoral system. In fact, in the last election, less than half of the eligible voters in the country actually voted. Now, it seems that Americans are really losing faith in the current electoral process altogether. But obviously you differ, because you're running for president in it. Now, why do you believe that the electoral process can bring real change to this country?
Well, Dan, we had over 90 million Americans that did not vote in this last election. And the reason they didn't vote is because they didn't have a candidate that actually represented them. And you see, the candidates that were put in place was, of course, Barack Obama and Mitt Romney. Well, you know, both of them are really out of touch with what's really going on in this country. You knew that Mitt Romney had absolutely no chance of winning because of where he was coming from. He flip-flopped around on all the issues and he just was not that great of a candidate. I thought, in my humble opinion, he was unelectable. So, you know, with a guy like myself that has a true plan, that is not going to waver from that plan and will not waver from my platform, being one of we the people that's gone through those same struggles of going through the unemployment line, having a good job, losing that good job, just barely being able to make ends meet, wondering how I was going to do it from day to day, just like millions of people across this country have been. I truly believe that the vast majority, 99.6% of this population, which is considered to be middle class and below, is going to be able to relate to my story and relate to what I want to do.
Okay, and which is good. What about the electoral system as a whole? There are a lot of people saying, you know, why would we even bother with the electoral system, just even not considering yourself running in it? Why would we even bother with the electoral system as a whole? Let's focus on something else. Let's focus on growing our own. Let's focus on getting a community that's self-sustaining. Let's focus on a bunch of other things. But why the electoral process itself?
Well, the electoral process, of course, is not really set up for a third-party candidate to do very well, which is why I am leaving the door open to talk to the major party. And, again, that's part of the reason. Do we need to have reform? Yeah. Is it a perfect system? Of course not. Is there anything perfect out there? No. That's part of America, the struggle that we have to go through to continue to perfect things. And when things go wrong, which they have in this country, that's when concerned individuals have to step forth. And, you know, I could take the apathetic role of saying, well, there's nothing that can happen and this, that, and the other. Or I can step forward and say, no, enough's enough. I'm drawing a line in the dirt. We're all sick and tired of being sick and tired, and let's all stand and let's all rise up, as my campaign slogan says. Let's rise up and work together to restore this republic.
Right. Well, Robbie, what do you think of Occupy and Tea Party and other things? Do you think those groups should try and find common ground to work together to restoring the Constitution?
Well, yeah, I really do. And I've actually had the opportunity to speak to some mixed groups, which had Tea Party Patriots. It had people from Occupy Wall Street, as well as libertarians, Republicans, independents, constitutionalists, and even Democrats, all in the same room at the same time. And we found some common ground. And, of course, we're never going to agree on everything, but if we can find some common ground and realize that we do need to get back to the basics, I believe that we're on the right track.
I agree.
I absolutely agree. Now, we're going to actually head into a quick commercial break here, and then we'll be back for another half hour, give you a chance to pitch your campaign a little bit more, talk a little bit about one of the most core parts of Candidate Wells' campaign, and that is the Vets for Kids program on the bay when we get back from the break. Again, this is the Panda Report on FreedomizerRadio.com. We'll be right back with Candidate Wells right after the break.
Please learn more about Freedomizer Radio by going to FreedomizerRadio.com and also Facebook us right at FreedomizerRadio.com. Catch you there.
Roar! Welcome to Crazy Dragon's Den with your hostess Tammy, the Crazy Canadian, here on FreedomizerRadio.com. Join me in the den Mondays and Wednesdays, 11 to 12 Pacific Standard Time, 2 to 3 Eastern Standard Time. Mondays are a double whammy from your crazy Canadian Tammy, because from 3 to 5 Pacific Standard Time, 6 to 8 Eastern Standard Time, my sidekick David makes his appearance, and we discuss a little of this and a little of that. We'll question things that make you go, and maybe find some answers. So join me Mondays and Wednesdays at FreedomizerRadio.com. To listen to my show live, you can call in to vent your roar or join our chat room to drop a comment or question. So join me, Tammy, the Crazy Canadian, on Crazy Dragon's Den here on FreedomizerRadio.com.
Hello again, Freedomist. Proof is here, and I want to talk to you about a brand new soda maker called SodaStream. Now, the Proof House has had SodaStream for about a year, and we love the thing. We use it quite often. With SodaStream, you can have fresh-made soda in seconds. One of the big things we like about it is that there's no high-fructose corn syrup and no aspartame. There's over 60 flavors, or you can create your own. Not just sodas, they also have iced teas and energy drinks. Here at the Proof House, we make egg cream sodas all the time. Some other facts to consider here: there's no electricity, no more wasted bottles and cans, and the most important thing is that it tastes great. Keep in mind, too, this is a perfect family present for Christmas, or, hey, just surprise the family with something great. Also, for a limited time, there's free shipping, so go to FreedomizerRadio.com and look for the SodaStream link, and I hope you check out the product. That's SodaStream right on FreedomizerRadio.com.
Thank you for tuning in to Freedomizer Radio, where we have a 24/7 chat room where you can come and share what's going on in the world with people of like mind. Anything and everything against the New World Order. Dial 347-324-3704 to catch our live show. Beginning at 9 in the morning, Pacific Standard Time, Monday through Friday till midnight, and 9 to 9 on Saturday and Sunday. Take us to the beach. Take us to the park. Take us on a walk with the dog. Only on Freedomizer Radio.
Please learn more about Freedomizer Radio by going to FreedomizerRadio.com and also Facebook us right at FreedomizerRadio.com. Catch you there.
All right, welcome back to the Panda Report. I'm your host, Dan Johnson. My co-host, James Dysart, joins us for the program. And we have candidate Robbie Wells. We're doing an interview with him, talking a little bit about his campaign, a little bit about some of his... but he has been able to handle our tough questions as we've been slinging them his way. It looks like we have a question from an audience member, actually. Area code 931, what's your name and where are you from?
My name is Austin Fiala, and I'm from Tullahoma, Tennessee.
All right, Austin, what's your question?
Well, my question is, what is he going to do to be able to help the homeless population in San Francisco? Because obviously it's been running very rampant.
Austin, I really do appreciate your question, and thank you so much for being on the call there in Tennessee today.
We do have a major problem with the homelessness across this country. And I mentioned that, of course, with our veterans a little bit earlier, that we've got homeless veterans, thousands of them. But it's bigger than that. It's just American citizens in a whole. A lot of it has to do with this economy. We've got to get this economy back on firm footing. We have become a consumption-based nation where all we do is consume, 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 buy, 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 and it's made us go broke. We've got to get back to producing. We've got to bring the manufacturing jobs back, which will put people back to work, which will get people off the streets because now they can afford to buy a home again or to rent an apartment, whatever the case may be. They've got to get a roof over their head. You're talking to somebody that has lived for years paycheck to paycheck and understood what would happen if I didn't have a paycheck. I've been real close to being there myself. But by the grace of the good Lord, I haven't been. But we've got to take care of those across this country. And I believe that by bringing the manufacturing jobs, by becoming energy independent, the whole nine yards, it will help us.
All right, excellent. Thank you, Austin. Now, on that note, you mentioned NAFTA a little bit earlier, and I know a little bit about it, and I know it's the North American Free Trade Agreement, and you also mentioned how that strips jobs from this country, and you also want to change that. Now, give me, at least for myself, if not for anybody else out there, a little bit more of a look into what is NAFTA, and what's going on with NAFTA, and why is it so bad that you want to get rid of it?
Well, NAFTA, again, was put in place about 15 years ago, and it was put in place to open up free trade amongst Canada, Mexico, and here. The only problem is by doing that, of course, companies were going to go where they could make the product the cheapest. This really hits close to home for me because I grew up in a little town, I was in high school, let me say, in a little town called Graniteville, South Carolina. And Graniteville was known for the textile mills. They made the denim for your blue jeans, employed thousands of people. And, of course, for every employee that was there that was working, that was an adult and had a family, their paycheck was probably affecting another three or four people outside of that. So you're talking about thousands of people in these mills that were affected when NAFTA took place and all of those mills shut down and went down to Mexico. And that's just this one town. That's all across this country that we lost millions of jobs. So we've got to bring those jobs back. How? By repealing NAFTA. And as president, I want you guys to understand that I will be pushing to repeal any sort of act that is not in the best interest of our economy and of the American worker. We've got 20 million Americans right now that are unemployed and another 25 million that are underemployed. And that number is probably underinflated because so many Americans have just given up hope of finding a job. Well, I'm here to tell you there is hope because this campaign is a ray of hope and a breath of fresh air for the people across this country. And let me get a little plug in right now. I would like to tell everybody that's listening, if you want to check out my platform, it's called The Game Plan. You can go on the campaign website, which is www.robbiewells2016.com.
Excellent. And again, that's robbiewells2016.com, correct?
That is correct.
All right. Excellent. One quick question, and then we're going to move on to your signature program. This had come from one of the people on our team. In Michigan, they had a huge fight over a recent law, and they had massive protests on both sides of the issue. And the law is right to work. And you talk a lot about manufacturing jobs, and a lot of proponents of right to work like to say that right to work will bring jobs to their state. Now, whether that's true or not, I haven't done enough research into it myself. But do you believe that right to work is a good policy, a good program for a state to have? And if so, why?
Well, again, the President of the United States is supposed to support each state, each governor, with the laws that they've got. And before I get into the right to work deal, let me just say this. As president, I believe in states' rights. So what goes on in one state may not be good for another state, and that's fine because different areas of the country need different things, such as, what California has on the books with marriage, or what New Hampshire has on the book with marriage, or what Michigan has on the books with right to work or with the labor union laws. So what I will say is this. The president really doesn't have a dog in that fight with each state with what they decide to do. What I will tell you is this. I do like the fact with the right to work laws that the individual is given the liberty and freedom to choose whether they want to be in a union or not. I don't think that unions are bad. I think unions actually can serve a good purpose as long as they don't handcuff the corporations that they're working with and basically, take them for everything that they've got. But, I'd like to see every man be able to go out and earn a great wage and be able to provide for his family. So if that means that they're in the union, great and good. If that means that the individual doesn't want to be in one, that's great and good. But I do believe that the individual should have that choice.
Excellent answer. I love the first part. The president does not have a dog in that fight. So does that mean that unlike our current president, you won't be placing bets on NBA Final Four?
Well, as a former NCAA Division I football coach, it was against the rules for us to bet anyway. And I've just kind of followed that policy. Even though I'm no longer coaching, I don't bet anyway. Good idea.
Agreed. All right. Well, I want to get into and talk a little bit in depth. We've got about 15 minutes left in the program. I want to talk a little bit in depth about one of your signature ideas, signature programs, which I must admit concerns me quite a bit. And it's called Vets for Kids. And I want you to have obviously a fair shot to tell our listeners and to kind of explain this. But there's many people who are pro Vets for Kids and many who I know who are against. Denise Williams, who's a columnist at Chicago Now, agrees with the idea on an economic basis, it costing only $1 per day per child while also employing soldiers. Former Congressman Ron Paul, however, came out against an NRA, or National Rifle Association, plan for extra security in schools in a Fox News column on Christmas Eve last year. So, firstly, is Vets for Kids different than the NRA plan, and if so, how? And then, secondly, why does America need Vets for Kids? And I'll repeat those questions before we go into it, but I'll give kind of my apprehension on it. As someone who founded and is now national director for an organization that explicitly and specifically focuses on the application of the laws of war and military law to American soil, we are very, very pro a veteran, very, very much on the side of the military. That's why we don't want to put them in a situation where they would have to shoot at another American citizen or arrest another American citizen who is not guilty of a crime. And I'm very concerned that about the idea of putting the military, and I know they're veterans, but the military in our schools. So I'd like you to kind of talk a little bit about that. Again, the questions are, number one, is it different than the NRA plan to put security guards in each school? And if so, how? And number two, why does America need Vets for Kids?
Well, there is really no difference from the plan that the NRA has, except for the fact that it would be veterans actually being the security guards. And the reason that I came up with Vets for Kids, and let me just give everybody a brief overview for those that don't know what Vets for Kids is. In the wake of the tragedy that occurred at Sandy Hook, elementary school, I came up with a plan that I felt would take care of three problems that we have in this country right now. We need to make sure that our children are protected. One thing that President Obama said in that press conference back in December, the evening that tragedy occurred, was, we can't have this happen again. He's exactly right. It's just his philosophy about making sure that it doesn't happen again is all wrong, in my opinion. I don't believe we need more gun legislation. Vets for Kids would protect every child across this country by taking our unemployed veterans and putting them back to work, and it would not be taxpayer money. We could take these veterans, put them back to work to guard these children. They would have to go through a screening process just like anybody else that works in a school setting to make sure that they are the right candidate that's actually working in those schools. There's really not much difference with having another security guard, but this is a way to put our veterans back to work. It's a way to make sure that our children are taken care of and that they're safe, so moms and dads can rest assured when they're away at work and their kids are at school that they're actually in a safe learning environment. And at the same time, I believe it protects every citizen's Second Amendment right, because now there's no reason to have any more gun legislation. As far as putting the military, this is not putting the military in the schools. These are civilians, veterans that have actually served but are not active in the military. They're veterans that have taken an oath to protect the people of the United States of America. So who better to go and protect these kids than these veterans? And here's how we would pay for it. It would actually be a student fee instead of actually taxing people. My plan would be for every parent to pay 20 cents per child a day, which would be $1 a week. And you could put one veteran per every 500 kids, and that would put $100 salary a week in that veteran, $100 a day in that veteran's pocket, which would be $2,000 a month. Now you're talking about unemployed veterans that are making $2,000 a month. And I believe that these guys and ladies have laid it on the line for us, and they deserve for us to stand up for them. And this is just my way of doing it.
Now, the Transportation Security Administration was given, or TSA as everybody likes to call them, was given jurisdiction over the airports of the country as an area that they had the authority to utilize suspicionless, warrantless searches on every person who attempted to fly. And recently, they have taken the transportation mandate very seriously. They have instituted what are called VIPR teams, or Virtual Intermodal Prevention Response Teams. These teams go Go ahead.
I love the name. I love the name on that, VIPR. I mean, some of these names make you wonder, like, are we even pretending to be the good guy in some of this stuff? I mean, VIPR, what is it? Predator drones, Hellfire missiles.
Yeah,
I mean,
VIPR,
really?
Predator, Prism. Yeah, not even really pretending to be the good guy anymore. And I concur. But the thing I'm getting at there, they've instituted these VIPR teams, and they've been on Tennessee highways. They were struck down by the Supreme Court, Tennessee highways. But they've been in bus stations, they've been in train stations. The TSA has radically increased their influence. And one of the, again, not that we endorse him here at Panda, but one of the things that Congressman Paul said about the NRA security program is that it would lead to metal detectors. It would lead to TSA pat-downs in schools. It's a process in psychology, wellness, conditioning a population to accept tyranny. And so how do you keep this Vets for Kids program from turning into something that conditions the kids and the next generation and the population from into tyranny and prevents something like what the TSA has been doing in our airports and in our transportation sources?
Very, very good question. And here's what I will say about the TSA. The TSA is a national entity. Would you agree with that?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, well, Vets for Kids, I'd like to see it done on the state and local level, and I'd like to keep the federal government out of it completely. It's just an idea that I have come up with, which I believe will protect children and put a lot of people back to work. I don't want any credit for it. I just want to see a lot of people benefit from it. But I do not want to see it go through the federal government, because then all you've done is made TSA bigger, as you say.
Good answer. Good answer. Another question on that. The Declaration of Independence. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. You talk about and I'm glad it's state and local. That is a very impressive answer, I must say. And that does, personally for me, allay a lot of my concerns about the program, is taking it state and local. But even for state and local government, you've used the term several times, which I've heard from certain people who I won't mention but rhyme with Weinstein. I've heard from people like that say, well, we need to protect our children, this will protect our kids, yet the government's main purpose, according to the Declaration of Independence, for these reasons, governments instituted among men, to protect our rights. And so where does the government, even a state and local government, go from protecting our rights to protecting us and protecting our children? How do we keep that from being a major expansion in government?
Well, again, it is not set to be anything with government. This is something that should be done on the state and local level, really. That's why there's not any tax money involved. And I've put it, my plan in place where it's actually a fee that each parent would pay. Because here's the thing. If you've got kids, I venture to say you'd be willing to pay 20 cents, just 2 dimes a day, to make sure that your kids were safe so that you didn't see another Sandy Hook type situation. At least most parents would feel that way. But again, this is something that needs to be done as locally as it possibly can. This is just an idea that I have that I would like to see spread across this country.
That is probably that is not the answer I was expecting. And however, I would say that the answer that you gave, I'm still kind of sitting here going, kind of like, it does kind of make sense now. I better watch having you on the program too much longer, or you're going to turn me into a fan.
Dan, let me tell you, I hope you do become a fan. In fact, I need some more people on the West Coast that'll work on this campaign.
if only I was on the West Coast.
Okay. Well,
we're based out here in Midwest Ohio. So
okay.
Well, but Dan, you're flying out on the 15th to 17th. Maybe Robbie could come out and get you then. Huh?
Oh, come on! You're already trying to give you're trying to give my services away. What are you? What are you, government? I mean, geez.
I'm Don King. I'm here. I'm Dan's manager.
Okay.
Dan, my question to you, if I can ask you a question, Dan, is when you fly out there, are you going to opt out when you go through the lines of TSA, or are you going to let them have the pat down?
You know what's kind of funny? and altogether extremely creepy all at once. First of all, I feel kind of special because I get the special security pat-down, which is when they take you aside and they ask you questions, they go through your stuff, and just pass you through the metal detector. And stuff. So I kind of feel special they picked me out for that. But it's creepy and funny at the same time. I fly out of a certain airport every single time I take off, just about. And I have opted out of there so many times. And apparently I'm one of the only people who does it, because I don't fly that often. But I've opted out so many times that I went up to and opted out the last time, and the guy looks at me and goes, "You must really like getting groped, huh?"
Oh my gosh.
I'm kind of like.
That's so gross.
Sure.
Yeah, at that point, I would have called 911 and reported him. I really would have.
No. I mean, I have less of a problem because I'm young and stupid and invincible and all that fun stuff. I have less of a problem with the radiation side of things, and I know that's a danger. I have less of a problem with the radiation side of things and a lot more of a problem with the way they do it. When you walk into a body scanner at major airports, it's not just walking through a metal detector. You stand there, and what position do they put you in? Surrender.
Oh, yeah, with your hands over your head.
With your hands over your head, standing and surrendering to a machine, number one, it's like Terminator, and your government, number two. And I refuse. I refuse to surrender. And you're surrendering your protections of your rights. You're literally, you're giving up the protection of your rights right there. And I refuse to surrender my God-given inalienable rights to the government. Period. Absolutely.
Oh, I know. And these guys are completely out of control. I mean, they told Congress to their face that Congress has, quote-unquote, no jurisdiction over them. I think that they're on crack or something if they really believe that. I can't believe that. That's treason. You can't do that. They're a federal agency.
Well, not to get on a different subject, but basically that's what President Obama said 2 summers ago when we started bombing forces in Libya. You know, because he said, well, I don't need your okay, Congress. All I need is the UN to tell me it's okay.
Yeah, I take orders from the United Nations, not the government, and not the people.
Right.
And as we're running out of time, I want to give you a chance right after this question to kind of pitch what you're doing, give a few final words, give a final quick speech there. We've got about 5 minutes left. But I want to ask a question and kind of see what you think. So you talk about the UN, and I really I'm not a big fan of the UN. That's just me personally, not necessarily the organization's stance, but I'm just not a big fan of the UN. The more so, because Lord Acton said power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Well, a friend of mine actually took the recording of Leon Panetta talking to Congress, pieces of that recording, and made it into a rap song called Oath Keepers. Now, what does the word, the oath, that I've ever seen from just about every state in the country and the military oath and et cetera, is support, uphold, and defend the Constitution of the United States against all our enemies, foreign and domestic. And what in your own words, what does the word oath keeper mean to you? Hello?
Can you hear me now?
Yep, we can hear you now.
Okay. Oathkeeper is a term used for a group that's basically saying that we're going to uphold the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the Declaration of Independence, and we're not going to let the federal government come in here and trump that. So, you know, with that being said, you know, I think that Oathkeepers is a great thing. So, you know, that's pretty much where I stand on that.
And I absolutely agree, and I know based on your previous answers to my questions before that there's no need for me to go into is there oath to the Constitution or is there oath to uphold the to uphold the federal government's authority and the Supreme Court law. But I must say personally I've been kind of impressed as someone who has been disillusioned the electoral system. I was unfortunately, and I'm as anti-partisan as I'll get, especially after this experience, I was unfortunately present at the RNC in Tampa last year. And needless to say, it was a experience in political corruption like I've never seen before. And so not too usually impressed with a candidate. And not to say Panda endorses any candidate, we don't. But, Robbie, I would say that you have definitely impressed me with your knowledge on the Constitution, impressed me with your adherence to it, and impressed me as someone who might actually do their job where do they go to Washington. Congratulations.
You, Rob. Robbie, I was wondering, would you be willing to take up maybe the idea of turning back the Act of 1871 that illegally incorporated Washington, D.C. as a district apart from the United States, and actually putting D.C. as part of Virginia or as its own state or something? Because I think a lot of the corruption that we're facing right now is because of that, and they believe they have autonomy. They have their own police and other system, and that gets them away with a lot of garbage. What's your feelings on that?
Well, I haven't really given much thought to it, but you've got some valid points there because, of course, Washington, D.C. is not part of any state. All the banks are there, and, of course, the federal government is there as well. You've got some valid points, and I will say this. I will be open to any valid points like that to sit down, look at them, and listen. I do not think that is a battle that needs to be fought anytime soon. You know the old saying, you got to pick and choose your battles. Well, we've got some major battles that I've talked about in my platform. I'm not saying that this one wouldn't be a good battle, but I think it would be on down the line.
Right, I understand what you mean. Well, you got some fantastic battles you're on right now, and that's great.
So I want to give you the chance to. I'm sure you've got a couple final words. We've got 2 minutes left in the program. And a couple final words and a little pitch for your website and your campaign a little bit. Go ahead and reach out to our audience with a few final words.
Well, let me start by telling everybody across this country a quick story about a young girl that went away to college on a music scholarship. And very quickly, the people in that school realized that this young lady was very talented and she was going to have a tremendous career. But just like most young girls in college, she ended up falling in love with this guy. He was an older guy, a married guy. One thing led to another. She ended up pregnant with an unwanted pregnancy, of course. And all of her friends and everybody in the school was telling her, hey, you've got your whole career ahead of you. You really don't need to have this baby. You need to go ahead and terminate this pregnancy, to the point where they set her up an appointment to go terminate that pregnancy. At the very last minute, this young lady said, no, I'm going to go ahead and have this child. I'm going to put this child up for adoption. The lady I just spoke about is my birth mom. I was adopted when I was 6 weeks old by a Baptist minister and his wife in the state of Georgia. How can you expect for me to treat you? You can expect me to treat you like you are a member of my family once I become president of the United States, and you never turn your back on your family, even if they turn their back on you. The only thing I ask in return is that each and every one of you listening across this country, you treat me like your adopted son. Give me the chance. I won't make a fool out of you, and I will not let you down, but we've got to come together as a people. You see, whether you're black or white, young or old, male or female, gay or straight, Democrat or Republican, constitutionalist or independent, Green Party, or libertarian, whether you are an evangelical Christian or a Catholic, a Mormon or a Muslim, an agnostic or an atheist, or even those of the Jewish faith, we are all different in this country because this is a melting pot. But we can embrace those differences because we have one common bond. We are all Americans, and it's time for each and every one of us, as we the people, to come together in 2016 and author in a new era called the Declaration of Restoration. May God bless everybody that's listening to this program. Dan, may God bless you guys in studio. May God bless these United States.
Thanks so much, Robbie. Thanks for being on the program. RobbieWells2016.com is his website. That's RobbieWells2016.com. Very glad to have him on the program. Again, my host, your host, Dan Johnson, co-host, James Dysart. Well, thank you for tuning in to the Panda Report. Tune in next week, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, at freedomizerradio.com. Call in number 347-324-3704. This is the Panda Report signing off. We will see you next week.
You know the Constitution like the back of your hand. You've read books, listened to podcasts, attended lectures, surfed websites, and watched videos. You've made liberty your life's goal, but something seems to be missing. Stickers from LibertyStickers.com. Exercise your freedom of speech with the world's most dangerous bumper stickers. That's LibertyStickers.com. But wait, there's more. You can buy Liberty stickers wholesale. Get them for 99 cents each when you put 100 or more in your shopping cart in any combination. Sell them or give them away. They're great for gun shows, flea markets, fairs, outreach, and more. Earn extra money, promote freedom, and spread the word. Need custom stickers, labels, or decals for your organization or business? Liberty Stickers makes them. Go to LibertyStickers.com to order or call 877-873-9626. LibertyStickers.com, the world's most dangerous stickers.
In the magical universe, there are no coincidences and there are no accidents. You are here and you found See the Power in You right here on Freedomizer Radio. A time comes in your life when you finally get it, when in the midst of all of your fears and seeming insanity of the world, you stop dead in your tracks and the voice inside your head cries out, enough, enough fighting and crying and struggling to hold on. That is a little quote from my friend Dee Heron. It's time to do something. We're here to share what makes you stronger in your personal life and in your community life. Anything to do with empowering the individual is fair game here on See the Power in You. And today we have a special guest, and her name is Tori Hughes. Hi, Tori.
Hi there, Cheryl. This is great. Thanks for having me on the show.
I can't even remember how I found you, but Tori teaches classes on creativity, and to me, creativity is one of those things that is innately empowering to the individual. So I asked Tori to come on and share about creativity and what that means to her and how she shares that with other people. So I'm very excited to have you here.
Well, so am I. So am I. And it was interesting listening to the last part of your show, actually, because there are a number of overlaps, and I don't think it's a coincidence. I mean, synchronicity is a huge part of how we are surrounded by the universe, whatever we want to call it. And that was just beautifully apparently randomly selected as another version of what I wanted to talk with you about. So thanks. How should we do this? What would you like?
Well, first let me introduce you to my co-host, Miss Cookie from Wisconsin. Say hello, Cookie.
Hi, it's nice to hear you, and I'm going to be looking forward to your program. Thank you so much.
Oh, well, you're very welcome. Hi, Cookie. That's great. A name like Cookie, that's fabulous. What a team you two are, huh?
We like each other.
We do. And we've been doing this together for since February last year, so over a year now.
Right. Mm-hmm. And we love synchrodestiny.
So maybe the first thing to do is to tell the audience a little bit about yourself, and you know how you came to be an artist. What's your story?
Oh my gosh. Well, I always was, which you know is the case with most people. Well, actually, everybody. And I, you know, and as a way to preface that, essentially, I would just reflect right back at you what you said before. Creative energy flowing through us is innate, and as far as I'm concerned, it's a process that moves through us, much like digestion and breathing. It is that within us. It happens all the time anyway. So in the work that I do with people, what I'm most interested in is helping each of you see that that is already always within you, and you have, in fact, been creating all along in all different kinds of circumstances and settings. And some people create in a way that our culture right now calls art, but others, like the people that I was just listening to before I came on, Brother Gregory, and those series of stories about starting your own fire department, that's another beautiful example of complete creative development. We see something we need to do. We take small steps to start bringing it together. I have slightly different phrases for working with it, but very similar process. And so the creation of the volunteer fire department and the creation of a beautiful watercolor are not, to my mind, very different at all. They're all about more responsibly listening and acting on this flow that happens to us all the time anyway, that I think is what humans are here to do. I could go on and on about that, but I think you all should just corral me in and ask me some questions. Otherwise, those of you listening, it was so funny when Cheryl and I first started talking about this, I found myself having to interrupt myself and say to Cheryl, you know, you're going to have to rein me in, because this is my very favorite topic in the whole entire world, because it encompasses the whole entire world. So back to you two.
Oh, well, you know what? I really like to just take the reins off.
All righty.
It's passionate about their subject.
Well, I am passionate about it, and I realize actually I never answered Cheryl's question. I could answer that question, but you go on, Cookie, and let me listen to what else. Was that Cookie? Did I hear the voices right, or was that Cheryl?
That was Cheryl talking, but I'm Cookie. But you know, I'm so glad you're bringing this up, because I'm an energy worker, and a lot of people don't understand that when we use our creativity, they think that we're using it for music and artistry and maybe play, and we're planning something, but like creating a meal or this, but they don't realize creativity can do with our minds, thinking and organizing things to make things flow, like you said, to connect with other people to make things happen.
Absolutely, and that's real interesting that you're an energy worker. And Cheryl, I'm sorry, I haven't learned to discriminate between your voice and Cookie's yet, so hopefully by the end of this program I'll be able to do that. Since I can't see you two, yeah, let me just backtrack for people who are listening and are wondering who on earth is this person. I should just fill in a little bit of personal introduction. My name is Tori Hughes, and I am speaking with you all from Santa Fe, New Mexico. I was not born here, but I've been here about 10 years. And it does deservedly have a reputation for a great center for a number of different kinds of creativity, spanning all the way from art and music and lots of different culture and everything you can think of, from more traditionally regarded arts to a lot of innovative scientific development, a lot of intellectual creativity, a lot of brainstorming and positive imagining, and then taking action on future possibilities that will help. So it's a very fertile community, and in fact, for most people, it's slightly overwhelming because there's just always slightly too much to do. But so I moved here, like I said, 10 years ago, from a background that included traveling all over the world. My father was a corporate guy, and we got transferred all the time all over the world. So every 2 or 3 years, I would be in a completely different culture and from birth. And as a result of that, one of the big fundamental shapers of my personality is that I always knew there were many, many ways to do things, because every time we moved, there were a slightly different set of economic and ecological and cultural parameters, and the society there had thus adapted slightly different responses to the situation.
Okay, folks, welcome to Ragamuffin Radio. Sorry about that. There was a little bit of confusion, totally my fault, and they had started to play a rerun because I was running a little bit late to get into the studio. But I'm here now, and I apologize for the confusion there to the Freedomizer crew as well as the listeners. So welcome back to Freedomizer Radio and Ragamuffin Radio on the Freedomizer Radio Network. We took a little bit of a break for the last 2 weeks, and we're back tonight, and we're going to be having Danny Roldan on the line. He's actually on hold now. I'm going to bring him up in just a few minutes. Danny and I go back a long way to We Are Change New York City. Danny is one of the founding members of the New York City chapter of We Are Change, and for years was out there on the front lines at Ground Zero, educating people about the 9/11 myth, and which is the official story. And Danny's on tonight, not really to talk about 9/11, but to talk about anarchy and voluntarism, which is something that the Ragamuffins know, I am a proponent of. And we're going to discuss why Danny doesn't believe that that can work. But since we're on the subject of 9/11 briefly, I do want to bring up that I did get to have a great meeting last night with an amazing researcher, Vance Green. This guy is he's on the front lines of 9/11 research, doing FOIA requests and trying to get this criminal government to fess up and release information about what happened on 9/11. And I had the chance to go over some brand new documents that he just had released to him from the National Reconnaissance Office, and there's some pretty telling evidence that is coming out. We shot a quick interview. Vance is going through the documents now and kind of analyzing it, and he's gonna create an analysis, and we're gonna release those documents along with the analysis all at the same time on TruthSquad.tv. So be sure to look out for that. Hopefully we can get that done this week. I got to say that it was pretty emotional for me to hold those documents in my hand yesterday. It's one thing to kind of know and believe that 9/11 is an inside job. It's another thing when you see evidence that so clearly implies that, I mean, I don't want to say it's empirical proof, like, here it is, the government's plan for 9/11, but it really strongly implies and confirms a lot of the stuff that we already believed about some of the drills that were happening on the morning of 9/11. So, actually, I'll bring Danny up to talk about that. Dan, you're live on Ragamuffin Radio.
Hey, what's going on, Dan? Thanks for having me. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we hear you loud and clear. Thanks for coming on.
I just wanted to correct you real quick. I'm not a founding member of We Are Change. We Are Change New York started in January of 2007. I jumped aboard in April, so I was there from the early beginning. I just don't want to really take credit for stuff like that. But I was with them for the first 3 months of their existence.
All right, well, I would consider that a founding member, even if you maybe didn't charter it. But so, Dan, I got to see some of these I know you know Vance Green, and I got to see some of these new documents that he just got. And basically what the documents reveal or finally admit, because the NRO had initially said that none of their drills ever got off the ground on 9/11 because of the 9/11 events. Well, what this proves is that that was a lie, which, you know, that's no big groundbreaking news that the government lies. But apparently the morning of 9/11, they were running a whole set of drills. One of them included a car that would knock down a telephone pole and knock out some power lines that would black out a bunch of NRO and Pentagon offices for 8 hours, removing their ability to communicate with each other. Convenient for the morning of 9/11 for that to happen. The other drill was a missile hitting the Pentagon. Another one was an office worker at the NRO shooting up the NRO, basically going, you know, postal and killing some of his coworkers and whatever. What were some of the other ones? I think the most amazing – oh, the other one was a plane being hijacked and one of the top brass officials at NRO being hijacked, you know, being taken hostage during the hijacking. So, I mean, it's just the coincidence for people to say that this is a coincidence, that these drills are going on. Meanwhile, in real life, these things are actually happening, plane hijacking and missiles hitting the Pentagon. I mean, for you to think that this is a coincidence is it's crazy, right?
Well, obviously it's not. I think, you know, all these revelations that Vance is bringing out, I mean, to people like us, we've already known this. You know, we don't need the documents to be released to understand that, you know, if there's reports in the news early on that there are drills taking place on 9/11 at the same time, I mean, that's pretty much the MO. You know, I mean, the odds of that, of those two separate events happening at the same time and have nothing to do with each other is, you know, you have to be brainwashed to believe that it's a coincidence. So, you know, I mean, I think we're at the point now, Dan, where even if they release these documents and even if we have all this proof in front of us about these drills, I mean, you have a majority of this country that's just so brainwashed. And it's been 12 years, going on 13 years now that 9/11 happened. People are just going to believe what they want to believe. And the, like people like in the Tea Party and the Obama zombies, like they're never going to accept 9/11 no matter what you bring to them because it's something that they don't want to believe. So they'll just find any excuse. And, you know, the media will come out with all sorts of stuff to discredit Vance or you know, or make a joke about it. And then, you know, these people will just they watch the news just not to learn something, but to only, you know, validate their pre-existing beliefs. So, I mean, it's difficult because I've brought to light a bunch of information. Like, for example, one of the things that you really can't dispute are the passports. Like, how do they survive the explosion? You know, and you bring that to people and, you know, either they don't have an answer and they stop the discussion or they just go on and on and on and on about how, you know, like it's believable and, you know, it just, you know, they don't make sense logically. So I really don't know what this is going to do other than make us truthers feel like, you know, validate what we've been doing for years.
Well, I think what Vance's goal is, and I definitely agree with you. I mean, I almost kind of had the same attitude, and I even said it to Vance last night. I said, you know, at this point, what good is it going to do? But I think what Vance is trying to do is create enough of a case that we could then go to, you know, I guess he wants to, you know, indict people. If we can create through FOIA requests, get enough of the government's own documents that we could then say, look, there's enough here for an indictment. We can indict this agency, if not somebody specific within that agency, for specific crimes. Because, you know, as you and I well know, no one has ever gone to jail for 9/11. I don't even think anybody was fired. So I think that's really what he's looking to do. He's looking to create a legitimate justification, not just crazy truthers saying we need a new investigation, but create a legitimate legal justification for a new independent investigation of 9/11.
Do you really think that the NRO and the CIA, you think any of those organizations will ever be indicted in this country? Like, do you think?
No.
I don't see it ever happening.
No, I don't think so. I think that it's important that there's somebody at least doing this research and getting this proof, and, you know, it may wake up a few more people. You never know.
Well, at the end of the day, man, the only thing that's really – and I get asked that a lot. And when I first started out, when we all changed in the truth movement, I admit, man, I was naive enough to believe that one day we're going to get an independent investigation. We're going to see, like, you know, Bush and Cheney in handcuffs. And I would run around the streets handing out flyers and preaching that. But now, you know, as I've gotten older, I'm 31 now, I see how the world works a little bit better. And I realize those people are never going to pay for their crimes. The only thing that we can do right now is to make sure that we have enough informed people in the electorate, like, you know, like our citizens in this country are informed enough that we won't let the old guard of the old, I call it the old world order, not the new world order, because, you know, these people like Kissinger and, you know, they've been around for a long time. This is nothing new. You know, we got to make sure that, you know, these people no longer ascend to the office of presidency. Like, you know, Ron Paul, we almost got him to break through. You know, I mean, unfortunately, the Tea Party hijacked his movement and ruined his whole, you know, ruined it all and took the momentum away. And then the Republicans ended up nominating the Magic Mormon, who they knew was going to lose. But I feel like once these baby boomers start stepping aside and getting older, and our generation and the younger generation start entering, start becoming more and more part of the population, I think we should start seeing a change. And here's one thing I agree with you about the whole anarchy thing. I don't think it's going to be a change at the voter booth. I think in order to make the change, we're going to have to do a replay of what just happened in Egypt. That's what's going to take it, man.
Well, I think at some point there may be something like that. I mean, I don't know that what's going on in Egypt is really grassroots. I think that the military is using the grassroots, who is sick of U.S. and Western interference, to kind of help them take control. Do I think now this is going to be a real, you know, kind of democratic, a true democratic government that they put in, this military, after this military coup, whatever it is? No. I also think at the same time, the U.S. is using this kind of, saying, oh, this is just a military coup to kind of discredit it at the same time. I don't know. I mean, I think you're right. I think a grassroots, you know, rebellion, quote unquote, is going to happen at some point. But I think more likely, and I think if we work to do this and create alternative institutions, you know, through agorism, I think we can avoid an armed conflict. Look, if there is an armed conflict, I really don't think many cops or a military are going to turn their guns against the American people to defend politicians. I don't see that happening.
I mean, you'd be surprised.
There will ever be very much of an armed conflict. I'm sure there would be some people within the ranks that could feel like they need to protect the system. But I think if it got to that point, I think that the military and the police would stand on the side of the people. I think we have a long way to go before we're at the tipping point where enough people are willing to get into the streets for that to really happen. Yeah, if it's you and me, if it's a bunch of truthers, if it's a bunch of liberty movement people that are still laughed at by the mainstream, yeah, then it would be very easy for the military and police to write us off and put us down as an insurrection. If it got to the point of Egypt where everybody's out in the streets because they're sick of X, they're sick of bankers getting away with, you know, looting the economy, they're sick of politicians, you know, whatever, I think that at that point, then, you know, I don't think that the military and the police are going to be on the side of the government.
Well, I mean, yeah, well, Egypt, it took 33 million people to get angry, and the military ended up siding with the people and gave Morsi an ultimatum. I think they gave him about 48 hours to make his decision to step down on his own before they removed him. And, you know, of course, the military was under economic aid of the United States and the Obama administration, and it was under direct control of the Muslim Brotherhood and Morsi. And, you know, even the military is, you know, not stupid enough to challenge 33 million angry people. So if we ever got those type of numbers, yeah, I think the military would be on our side. But the whole point is, man, you know, don't underestimate the lust for power. And, you know, being a cop is not power. You know, I mean, you know, you got cops, they run through red lights whenever they want with their lights on. They can pull you over for whatever reason they want. They got, you know, they got the little thin blue line where they can get away with a lot of stuff. I mean, you know, they kill kids, and then they end up doing desk duty for it. And it's those little menial, you know, pieces of power that gets the average person to just go insane and think that they're all of a sudden a king, you know? And don't underestimate that just desire to be one of those minions, because they get a little bit of power with a badge. It can go a long way. And so, you know, soldiers are included in that, you know? And someone like you who's anti-state, I mean, you can understand the psychology of the state and the reason why, you know, people like police officers and soldiers, why they will do things just for following orders. The psychology behind it is, you know, they're following orders, they believe in what they're doing, and also they enjoy the power. I mean, why question that? You know, if you're a cop, why question the system? I mean, you know, you got a great opportunity to drive around in speed. You know, you get pulled over, you don't get a ticket. You know what I mean? Like, you know, they can park in front of fire hydrants. I saw that video you did of Debbie Rose, you know, when she was parked in front of a fire hydrant, and that's not real power. But to me, to people like us, like, you know, just like the everyday American, if we park in front of a fire hydrant, we're getting a $150 fine, depending on what city you live in. You know, I would love it if I could park wherever the hell I want and not have to pay a fine. That's the little power trips that, you know, that are perks with the job of being in law enforcement. And all they got to do is just not question authority, follow orders, and, you know, they feel like if they do that long enough, they'll be taken care of by the system. But they have no clue that they're the victims as well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I agree with you 100%. And that's the reason why I believe that anarchy is the most moral system, because in anarchy, we are all accountable to ourselves, and there's no power structure that anybody can take advantage of. I don't have legitimate power. As a city council person, I don't have the legitimate right to park at a hydrant. I don't have the legitimate right to exercise authority over someone else. As a police officer, I have the legitimate right. I can kill a civilian and get away with it because I just have to fear for my life. So you, if I can say, well, I fear for my life, he had a gun or he had something that looked like a gun, I could put 40 bullets in you and get off scot-free. Recently, one of the more disgusting stories of the NYPD, I'm sure you heard about it, the two cops, they took a drunk girl home. One of the cops stood guard outside the apartment while the other one went inside and raped her, and then claimed in court that, oh, we had consensual sex and then I fell asleep on duty. And that was fine. He wasn't indicted. He was acquitted. So it's just like, this is the kind of power that you have as a government minion. So why not take away that power and now everybody's on equal ground?
Well, that's the thing. If you there's where I think the fallacy begins. You know, eliminating government is not going to eliminate that sense of power. I mean, people will derive power from anywhere, not just government. You know what I mean? The fact of the matter is, you know, no, cops aren't allowed to just shoot people and get away with it. They're doing it now, and they're getting away with it because, you know, the system is broken. That's the point. Like, you know,
a councilwoman. That's false, because the law says it's okay for a cop to kill somebody if they're in fear of their life.
Okay, yeah.
That's not an abuse of the law. It is the law.
Well, that, you know what? It's an abuse of the law if, you know, innocent people are getting killed indiscriminately. Like, you know, when you're shooting a dog for just doing dog behavior, or when you're tasing somebody in a wheelchair to death because they look like they were making a threatening move. I mean, the guy's in a wheelchair, and they're getting away with this behavior. Obviously, the system is broken. We need to, as a people, revisit that. Now, you know, the councilwoman can't park in front of a fire hydrant. They do, and they get away with it. Now, that's not the fault of government. That's the simple fact that the system is obviously broken. Nobody, you know, our government says that nobody is above the law, period. You know, now, if people are behaving above the law, well, I mean, you have, you know, the solution is not to just, you know, throw out the entire system. The point is to change it. You know, elect people that will be held accountable. You know, what you did with that Peaceful Streets Project, that the problem with our government is not government itself. It's the fact that you are the only one with a camera that's doing that in Staten Island. Like, everybody should be doing that. If 5,000 people were doing that every day in Staten Island, I guarantee you that, you know, the system will change. You know, people that rise to political power, that want to be politicians, there's something specific about their personality where they desire power. Now, the issue is, with our government, in a democratic or constitutional republic system, they derive their power from the people. So in order for them to be elected into an office, they're going to have to take stances on issues that coincide with the majority of what the people want. Now, you can be a complete scumbag and hate dogs as an individual, but if you care about getting elected, and people are ranting and raving and they're marching in the street about police killing dogs, you better believe that that guy is going to, on his campaign trail, start proposing laws, you know, protecting animals and protecting dogs from being shot by police. And that's where the law changes. The problem with the government is not government itself. It's the fact that we have a lethargic, dumbed-down, distracted society that really don't care about, you know, the direction that the government takes them in. As long as they have their, you know, their menial little luxuries, as long as the TV works, their electricity's on, you know, the football game's on, whatever. They really don't have the motivation to put the effort in. And let me ask you this. I know you've spoken to people that are sheep or people that are not aware. And I know people have told you, like, I don't like to get involved in politics. It's too controversial. It's too much work. I leave that to the politicians. But I got people in my family that tell me that all the time. You know, I got friends of mine that when I start talking about politics, they roll their eyes and they say, here goes Danny again. Like, those people are the reason why we got cops shooting people in wheelchairs, why dogs are getting shot, why councilmen and councilwomen are parking in front of fire hydrants and meters without putting the quarters in. You know, because people like that, really, they don't care if a city worker or a councilwoman parks in front of a fire hydrant. They got other things to worry about. But, you know, the whole mentality is if you let them get away with that, they're just going to keep taking more and more and more. You know, I think that's where me and you differ. I agree with you on anarchy, man. I think that anarchy and voluntarism and, you know, destroying all, you know, government control and mandatory force should be the utopia and the key that we should strive to be. But, I mean, if you look back, if you look at the way things are now and just look, you know, you don't even have to look back at human history. Just look back at the history of this country. There are certain aspects where, you know, people have achieved their goals through petitioning government that in the past, whether it was a civil rights movement, whether it was, you know, and we understand, you know, the whole thing about the Civil War wasn't completely about slavery, but slaves were freed. You know, if you want to call what we have freedom, slaves were essentially no longer slaves, and they, you know, and they can get a living wage. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Dan, we just got a break real quick, and I have a couple of points I want to make. I somewhat agree with you on some things, but I want to talk about the nature of government and why it's immoral when we come back. So stay tuned, everybody. This is Ragamuffin Radio. If you haven't already followed us on Facebook, go to facebook.com/Ragamuffin Radio and follow us on Twitter at Ragamuffin Radio, and we will be right back after this short break.
Hello again, Freedomist. Proof is here, and I want to talk to you about a brand new soda maker called SodaStream. Now, the Proof House has had SodaStream for about a year, and we love the thing. We use it quite often. With SodaStream, you can have fresh-made soda in seconds. One of the big things we like about it is that there's no high-fructose corn syrup and no aspartame. There's over 60 flavors, or you can create your own. Not just sodas, they also have iced teas and energy drinks. Here at the Proof House, we make egg cream sodas all the time. Some other facts to consider here, there's no electricity, no more wasted bottles and cans, and the most important thing is that it tastes great. Keep in mind, too, this is a perfect family present for Christmas, or, hey, just surprise the family with something great. Also, for a limited time, there's free shipping, so go to FreedomizerRadio.com and look for the SodaStream link, and I hope you check out the product. That's SodaStream right on FreedomizerRadio.com. Hey guys, Proof here. Guess what? I just got a cell phone. Hey, for everyone that knows me, I'm not a fan of cell phones, but I just signed up with a company called Solavay. And Solavay is offering a plan right now with unlimited phone, text, and web for only $49 a month. Plus, if you refer a friend or two, you get a discounted rate for everyone you refer for as long as they have Solavay, not just for the first month, but for the whole time that person has Solavay. You sign up enough people, and Solavay pays you every month. What other cell phone company is going to pay you for service? Anyway, go to Solavay.com/Freedomizer. That's Solavay, Solavei.com/Freedomizer. Learn all about it. Plus, and another kicker, if you sign up three people under you, you'll
You'll get another month for free as well. Plus, they're going to pay you cash. Anyway, solavay.com/freedomizer. Hello, everyone. Proof here again. I want to let you know about our brand new sponsor, Silver Leaf Tea. Now, as you guys know that have listened to me for years, I am a tea aficionado. I have hundreds of different flavors and styles at my house, and Silver Leaf has exactly the kind of stuff that I look for. I love loose tea, great antioxidants. I just love the taste of it, and this Silver Leaf has black, they have green, they have white, they have organic. Great for hot tea and iced tea. Silver Leaf Tea, it's right on our website, freedomizerradio.com. And check it out and order it. Silver Leaf Tea.
All right, folks, we are back and we are talking about anarchy and government. So, Dan, my main problem with government is that the very nature of government is immoral. The only tool the government has to enforce anything is violence. It's not defensive violence. I wouldn't even consider self-defense to be violence. I would say that violence is physical action that's aggressive in nature, whereas if you're defending yourself, that's defensive, so it doesn't even qualify as violence. But everything that government does, it does by violence. So even if government does something that is good, it is doing that good with evil. So it really, the argument is that the ends justify the means. Well, the argument with voluntarism is that you don't need violence to achieve good. You can achieve good the same way. So practically speaking, what is to stop us from being anarchists now?
Well,
I pose that question to you.
Well, here's the thing. You know, I disagree. First of all, when you say, the morality of government, morality is subjective, man. You know, different cultures and different people all over the world, they view you, what you might view as moral in one corner of the world might be completely unacceptable in the other, and vice versa. So, you know, if you look back at human history, we have 8,000 years of written, recorded history from the Sumerians to today. And every single civilization that has prospered always had some form of government. It's not so much that, government forms because people want to be taken advantage of, and people want to take advantage of others, so they form government. It's just a natural social human evolution to gather together in groups. And when you have groups gathering together, you form a hierarchy. And sometimes, in the early days, back in the Ice Age, when humans crawled out of caves and became community, you had hierarchy. I'm aside from using the typical terms of government like socialism and capitalism and communism and whatever. You can have government without those labels. Any form of governance is acceptable. You can have tribes in the Amazon that have never made contact with the outside world, and they have their own form of government where, they have a tribe of elders that make decisions and people abide by it. Now, those people aren't abiding by the rules of those elders because of the threat of violence. They're doing it because, that social order and community is something that human beings seek on a species level,
Right.
And
let me stop you for a minute, because I don't disagree with having structure. I disagree with having a certain class of people, which is what government is, a class of people having the legitimate use of violence. So when government commits an act of violence, it's legitimate, and therefore by association or by implication, that force is moral. So if I smoke a joint, it is moral for the government to use violence against me and put me in a cage because of that. Even though in reality, and when I speak of morality, I'm just really speaking of the non-aggression principle, which is the ultimate morality. It's really the core of morality of pretty much every religion, right, is don't harm other people. Do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. You can do as you please, just as long as you're not hurting someone else.
Right. Right. But if you think about, look at the Salem witch trials. I mean, there was really not much government that went on with, you know, there. That was just a community that were, you know, hanging people that they thought were witches. And, you know, those people obviously didn't have any problem with putting their hands or torturing another human being,
sure.
You know. And
sure.
they didn't need government to do it. You know, they just did it on their own because, you know,
right.
they were nuts.
But that violence was not justified. That violence was not, it wasn't moral in the sense that they could have some kind of justification. Well, this is the law, and so you broke the law, and therefore, because you broke the law, we can legitimately use violence against you. So the idea of anarchy is that you remove any legitimization of violence. So now, if anyone commits an act of violence against somebody else, it's immoral. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. There's no justification for it. It's immoral. What you did was wrong.
Well, we have that
and
now.
And
now,
we don't have that now.
Well, how though? If I commit an act of violence against you, that's immoral, and I face consequences. Right?
Well, if you're a cop, you can commit an act of violence against people and get away with it. If you're a government worker, you can.
Hold on.
Let me answer the question. If I park in a way that you don't like, you can call 311 or you can call 911. And look, this guy that just got shot up, or I guess it was a couple of years ago, but the story is going viral right now. He got shot for he was playing with the hose nozzle on his friend's porch. He was sitting on the porch, and the neighbor thought it was a gun and called the cops on him. Cops came, didn't say a word to him, just shot him. That's the government. That's that person using government violence against him for when there was no crime committed. The guy wasn't hurt. Even if he was sitting there with a gun, he wasn't hurting anybody with the gun. He didn't hurt the neighbor with the gun. He didn't threaten the neighbor with the gun. The neighbor was just, you know, being a little bitch, and, oh, my God, he has a gun. Call the police.
Well, that neighbor, you try telling that neighbor that's quick to call the police that, you know, you don't need government. Obviously, he's going to disagree with you. You know, people are going to seek out government for that protection, however irrational they might think it would be to have the government protect them from everything. And obviously, we both think that's a stupid way to think. But the point it goes back to my original point. You know, the cops, you know, a cop can't just go out and indiscriminately kill people. They can't. There's been times where cops went out and killed somebody. They went on trial and they went to prison. If you're bringing up the point that
sometimes the evidence is so strong.
Yeah, but if you're going to bring up the point where cops now are getting away with murder more and more, well, I agree with you. Obviously, the system is broken. That's why I go back to what I said before the break. You know, it's not the fact that, you know, government is a problem where cops are killing people. That police officer is making an individual decision to react with a hairy trigger finger. And obviously, the police force and the state is going to back them up. Now, you got to understand something. The state, I don't usually believe in necessary evils. I don't like to use that term. But when it comes to the state, you got to understand something. The state is just the government is not something physical. It's not a computer software that is installed. We don't live in an actual matrix like this is a movie with Neo. You know, it's not a computer program where it's physically controlling everything we do. Government is a construct of the human intellect. It's not something physical. It's something that we think up to satisfy, obviously, some innate need as human beings when we seek order and structure. Now, if you have the state on one side and the people on the other, what the people have to start understanding is just like a corporation can get greedy, and this is the thing when it comes to privatization versus nationalization of resources and government involved in commerce. You know, a private corporation could be just as predatory as the government. And it's the people
corporations wouldn't exist without government.
Well, the people can keep a predatory corporation at bay by simply not shopping at a specific place. For example, if people were really, really pissed at Home Depot for chopping down trees, all people have to do is just boycott Home Depot and it wouldn't exist anymore. Or they'll change their ways because they care more about the bottom line than anything else, and you're affecting their bottom line. You have to think of the state as the same thing. If you let the state run around unabated without any consequences, and you just every 4 years, the extent of your patriotism And the extent of your participation in government is just you slopping your feet to the voter booth every 4 years and electing one of the two that the government and the media tells you has the best chance of winning. Well, then you're going to have cops that are killing people and getting away with it, and you deserve it because you're not holding the state accountable. The state is just like a corporation, and that people need to push back. People need to take control of their destiny. And don't blame the state, and don't blame the government. Don't blame the office of mayor. The office of mayor is just a chair in a building. It means nothing if the people march on City Hall with pitchforks and drag Bloomberg out by the back of his neck. Now the mayor office means nothing.
I agree, except that I don't believe that you don't need to have that office. That office serves no purpose. We can achieve the same things that the quote-unquote mayor's office achieves without the constant threat of violence, without electing a ruling class over us and having to keep them. Which do you prefer? Do you prefer having to rely on the collective being vigilant when we already know that they aren't? Or would you rather rely on yourself to be responsible for yourself, to make sure that the needs of your community are met? Look, you can choose to move to a different community. So if I'm in a community of brain-dead zombies that they just want to play video games all day, I'm probably going to move because I'd rather be around other people that have the same values as me, that are going to be armed so that we can protect ourselves, our community, ourselves, our family, our community, from outside invaders. So I'd want to, join a project maybe like the Free State Project or what John Bush, the Lone Star Libertopia, what he's doing in Texas, where I could be a part of a community where people are awake and understand and think like me. And, so that because we share those values, that we can have peace and we can respect each other, and then we can protect ourselves from outside threats. Now, we don't need to institute a government for us to all agree, look, we're the 10 of us, let's say, are the adults of this community. We're agreeing that for the purposes of if we're being invaded by an outside gang, we're going to band together and form a quote-unquote militia, and we're going to protect our community because it benefits all of us to do that. And if one guy says, well, yeah, you guys can all do that, I'm not going to be involved, I'm not going to do it, well, I mean, that's fine. I'm still going to protect the community because it still benefits me to do it. So as long as the majority shares the values, then it can work. Why do then we need to say, okay, so then let's form a government, you guys can all vote, who wants to be the leader, I'll be the leader, you guys vote for me, do you guys approve? Okay, I'm the leader, now I have power over you, and to keep you safe for my term of election, you have to do what I say because somehow now, because you've elected me, I have some kind of expertise about how to keep you safe. No, it's unnecessary. Why elect somebody a leader? We can say, okay, Danny has military training, so maybe we should just, we'll take his advice while we're, doing this militia, but we don't need to elect him as a ruler and give him power, the power of violence over us. It's unnecessary. We can achieve all the same things through peaceful means and voluntary means.
Well, the thing that you just described where, you got people that got together and, the top 10 adults were the ones that were the decision makers and they would band together.
Not top 10 adults. I'm saying if it's a community of 10 people or 10 families, and you've got the adults of making the decision.
I got you.
It's not so much democracy as just being voluntary cooperation.
Whatever you want to call it, voluntary cooperation, the democracy, the semantics don't matter.
It's not semantics. But wait, that's the thing. It's not semantics because.
But what
democracy is violence, and voluntary cooperation is not. So it's two very different concepts.
I'll touch up on the whole democracy is violence comment in a minute, but what I just wanted to say is what you described, that is government. It doesn't have a specific name, or you call it voluntary cooperation, that's governance. That's structure, that's order. Now, here's the thing.
We're governing ourselves.
Yeah, right, here's the thing. That's what the office of mayor is. That's the misconception that people are having about government. the mayor's office is self-rule, because the mayor is one of the people amongst us that we feel is the most qualified to become mayor. It's supposed to be one of the members of the community. And if that one person of the community, that mayor, isn't living up to what they promised on the campaign, well, then he gets voted out. That's the same
that's
premise.
That's not self-rule. Someone having power over you, just because you gave them permission to have power over you, that's not self-rule.
The government is supposed to be the government is not supposed to have power over the people. The people are supposed to have power over the government, and that was the point of the American Revolution, to fight against the crown. Is the fact that there is no one, you know, unanimous decision maker as far as the king is concerned, and you know his word rules. The point is that, you know, as far as structure goes, yes, we want to have a structure, we want to have governance, we want to have a dispassionate mediator when it comes to, you know, making certain decisions, but, you know, one branch of government is, or one person isn't supposed to have power over the rest. That's why the Constitution was written with the balance of powers between the legislative, judicial, and the executive. The problem, like I said, the problem now is the people, we allow the executive branch to run away with power. I know, because everybody's scared that every time a Muslim boards a plane, that they're going to fly it into a building. So the people at large are just handing over their liberty to the executive branch. But the point is that the people are supposed to have power over the government. Now, the mayor doesn't have any power except the power that we give him. See, if people were responsible enough...
Bloomberg has his own army.
But he has his own army because people over the years have let it get to that point. And he has his own army, but the NYPD, like I said, is a tool of the state. But the problem is you let it get that way. I mean, you let the office, you know, usurp power incrementally, little by little over the decades, to the point where you got the largest police force, you got stop and frisk now. Not enough people are complaining about stop and frisk. This guy Bloomberg is such a nut, but he keeps getting elected over and over and over again. I'm from New York, and I've heard people talk about Bloomberg for years, how they hate him. But he still manages to win election after election after election. You got to ask yourself, why is this guy winning elections? Why? You know,
I still don't understand. I still don't understand why you insist that we have to elect somebody when we can just rule over ourselves. Let me worry about myself. I don't need Bloomberg to come collect my garbage. I don't need Bloomberg to keep me safe with his police, with his army. I don't need Bloomberg to put my house fire out. I'll do it all myself. Just leave me alone.
Here's the response to that. Because New York City grows from 10 people to 8.6 million like there is in New York City. You know, it's just by sheer logistics, you're not going to have 8.6 million people living in one of the largest geographical areas in the country as far as the city's concerned, with five boroughs. Each borough could be its own metropolitan somewhere else. And, you know, Staten Island has a higher population than the city of Miami. You know, just by logistics and population's concerned, you're not going to have 8 million plus people all on the same page of certain things. You're not even going to have communication between someone that lives in Tottenville and someone that lives in Astoria, Queens. You know, it's just, you know, it's for the mutual benefit of 8 million people. You know, it's different than when you're talking about just a group of 10 people that form a community somewhere in Texas where, you know, it's nothing but dead farmland for square mile after square mile. There are certain aspects of cities and communities that just require some sort of office. They know people, and it's not that I think that it requires it. I'm not here on your show promoting the state. What I'm saying is there's nothing you can do to stop it, because that's just the way people are going to lean towards. You know, you're not going to be able to preach to the city of New York and say, hey, we're going to remove the office of mayor and the NYPD is going to be disbanded. People are going to riot, and they're going to desire that structure. You know, whether or not they're brainwashed to be statists is up for debate.
Yeah, well, they've been socially engineered.
But, you know, you can't socially, you know, it's social engineering that's been taking place for how many thousands of years. You know, this, you know, New York City is, you know, this is not the first mayor to ever come to power. You know, the United States is not the first country to have a president, to have an army. I mean, you know, countries have been having armies since, you know, before the days of Christ. You know, so people have been desiring, you know, government and structure and a military. You know, Rome had senators, the Greeks had government, and these are thousands of years before Christ was born. Nothing to do with modern day society. You know, our communities and our planet is completely different. But the only thing that hasn't changed is the human intellect. I mean, our brains are the same now as they were 100,000 years ago when people were crawling out of caves and trying to stay cold because of the ice age. It's not that we've, you know, grown biologically and all of a sudden we discovered government. It's just, you know, the way I see it, it's just a certain thing that people are going to gravitate towards when communities get large and when people start going to work and taking care of families. Like, no one really wants to, you know, keep up with hiring a private police force to patrol your property 24/7. You know, in midst of all the other things that are going on, when people could just get together, you know, pay some taxes, you know, and have a police force do it. Do I think that that's the moral way to do things? I'm not giving my opinion. I'm just telling you that this is the way the world works, and this is the way the world's been working for a long time. So it's obvious that this is just the way things are going to be. You can take the United States and completely abolish it and abolish government. You know, you can have – I watch a lot of TV, and I watch shows like Falling Skies or The Walking Dead where there's an apocalypse, and now there is no government. And people are just out there fending for themselves. But if you watch those shows, it's kind of a reflection of reality where people are seeking government, you know. Those people that are facing the apocalypse, they're actually – one of their goals are to have a system that resembles somewhat what they knew before, which was a government and a president and decision-makers and law keepers and police. And I guess it's just something that people are going to lean towards. Now, I agree with you. I think that the most moral way to do it is – if we can govern ourselves without force, that would be a great end game to achieve. The question is, how do we achieve it when we have a world population of billions of people and all of them want government? You know, all of them need it. You know, and you're always going to have a Stalin or a Mao or a Lenin or a Bush or an Obama that is just going to rise up. You're going to have a Rothschild or a Warburg or a Morgan that's, you know, they're going to monopolize a certain aspect of the economy, whether it's a local economy or whatever, you know, and they're going to rise to power and they're going to use their wealth to commandeer communities and until they get so powerful that there's really nothing you can do to bring them down. And then and revolutions will start and you'll have a new government. You know what I mean? So I have a question for you. How do you go about achieving, this anarchist, voluntarist state out of what we have now when you yourself have a driver's license? You have you drive a car on government roads with a license plate. You pay property taxes. You know, you have a job, and then you're gonna have to pay income tax on the gains, or you're gonna go to prison. You know, you have the sanitation department pick up your garbage. I correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think you're hauling your garbage to the dump yourself. You know, and you have the fire department. You know, I mean, how do you figure on taking yourself out of the, you know, unplugging yourself from the matrix and actually living the life that you're, you know, that you're propagating, that you're promoting?
Well, okay. So let's address the roads argument, because, I mean, this is like the typical argument. Well, you're not an anarchist because you drive on government roads. Well, first of all, the roads were technically built by private industry, paid for by government. That government took the money by force from the people and then paid one of their crony corporations to build the roads. So, yeah, they were built with money, blood money, basically. But that's because the government used force to do it. So what alternative do I have? I could build my own alternative roads, I guess, if I was able to acquire enough real estate. I mean, that's not really a legitimate argument. The driver's license is a legitimate argument. Technically speaking, having a driver's license is me asking the government permission to drive. So it's against my principles. I agree. But practically speaking, living in New York City, it would be very difficult if I'm getting arrested every 4 days for being, you know, pulled over if I get pulled over once every 2 or 3 months, let's say. So being getting arrested every 2 or 3 months for not having a license, it's kind of not worth what resistance does it really offer for me to not have the license. So if I were to not have a license, it would be a cool, like, I don't know, what's the word? Like, to be an example to other people, to say, oh, yeah, I don't have, like, it's kind of like a talking point, right? So, oh, I don't have a license because it's my act of civil disobedience. And it's a legitimate act of civil disobedience. But it's not like it's really going to stop people from believing the government is necessary, weighed against the fact that I have a 2-year-old son and I can't afford to get arrested every 2 months. Yes, I've chosen to get a driver's license. I have plenty of friends.
Well, Dan, let me just say, you're admitting right now that on a practical level, anarchy is just not possible.
No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, for me to live in New York City, it's not practical for me to get arrested. It could be done. I could do it.
You don't have to live in New York City and take my chances.
Correct. I don't have to live in New York City, and I could not have a license, and I could deal with the inconvenience. I'm not going to go to jail for driving without a license. I could deal with the inconvenience of going through all that trouble. But what I'm saying is I'm weighing it against the value it has as an act of resistance. So does it aggravate me that I have a license? It absolutely does. I have to tell you, it aggravates me when I do a lot of things that I know I'm violating my own principles. So, yeah, we don't live in a perfect world. The government still forces me to pay real estate taxes. That's true. But there's nothing I can do about that. The IRS puts a gun to my head, or the city of New York puts a gun to my head and says, give us some of your money, and what am I supposed to do? Say no, and then they put me in jail or kill me?
The government's not putting a gun to your head to pay property taxes. You can go and rent.
Yes, they are.
And pay a landlord. You can rent
right.
if you want.
You're right. They're gonna put a. They're not gonna put a gun to my head. They're just gonna seize my property. That's true.
Well, no. You can. What I'm saying is, you can avoid paying property taxes altogether. If you want to unplug yourself from that aspect of the matrix, you can go to a landlord and just rent property, and therefore you'll never have to pay property taxes again. Now, let me ask you that.
Taxes are still being paid on the property I live in, so what's the difference if I'm paying it or somebody else is paying it?
Because you're not paying it, because you're living up to your principles of not paying taxes into a system that you don't believe in. You can rent from a private owner,
which is the whole thing of this conversation. Here's how I can do that while still enjoying property ownership. I can do things like, and you mentioned income taxes, I can do things that offset those taxes. I can write off and write down my taxable income to almost nothing or to nothing. And that's the goal, is to write it down to nothing. And, you know, that's what corporations do. That's what the top corporations do. They do it legally. I mean, it's a little bit harder for us in the working classes to do it, but it's still possible. You know, a lot of it has your income, as much income as possible, should be off the grid. It should be black market income. And then it's not taxable. The government doesn't even know about it. If you're paying and trading in Bitcoin, for instance, that's non-taxable. So that's a great way to not pay taxes and starve the beast. And every act – and look, it's not like anybody can live completely free, even if you're in the sticks, in the woods of Texas. It's impossible to live completely free of statism because, unfortunately, statism has invaded every aspect of our lives. But it's the act of resistance. It's living as much as possible and moving. It's moving in that direction of your life being an act of resistance to statism, or not even an act of resistance, being the opposite. Living in a way, in living free of violence, living free of coercion. And it's very possible to do that a lot more than most people live that way. So technically, yes, could I have a little less violence in my life if I stopped, if I didn't have a driver's license? Yes. The violent act of the government taking $25 a year or whatever it is that I pay for my driver's license is far less violent than if I were to get arrested every 2 months every time I get caught driving without a license. So that is why I make the decision to violate my own principles, ask the government permission to drive, because in the end I will suffer less violence that way.
Well, let me ask you this very important question that I got for you right now. Since you brought all that up about, you know, getting a driver's license is the lesser of two evils, yada yada. You know, there's ways where you can, you know, circumvent the whole tax situation. Let me ask you this: how do you expect to spread anarchy on a wide enough level where it becomes an everyday way of life in this country, when someone like you, who is so passionate about this way of life, is being forced to sacrifice his own principles right now? Like, for example, you can go to your neighbor and say, hey, man, I guarantee you your next-door neighbor isn't as hardcore of an anarchist as you. But yet you're sacrificing your principles by getting a driver's license. How can you convince your neighbors and your family and your friends to drop their driver's license right now and start the beast? And if you can't, then how the heck could anarchy ever work? And it can't. With me, that's how I know it can't. Because people aren't, if you won't even drop your driver's license, you can't expect 8 million people in New York City, 280 million people in the United States, 3 to 5 billion people in the world to just inconvenience themselves or make it more difficult on themselves and their families to accept anarchy when you won't even inconvenience yourself enough and you'll voluntarily stick yourself into the matrix by keeping a driver's license. So how are you going to spread that to other people
because,
if you won't do it yourself?
Well, because, it's not like I'm saying, oh, well, I have a driver's license, so that's not a – I'm admitting that it's for convenience. And if all of us got together and said, you know what, we're all going to decide to stop, just like the same way the gay rights, gay marriage issue, if gay people stop saying, well, we're going to just stop asking permission and or we're going to stop waiting for the government to give us permission to get married, and we're just going to do as we please because we're free people and the government doesn't have the right to tell us who we can marry, that it would have been over decades ago. Why is it that it took till 2013 for this to happen or 2012 when it could have been done 100 years ago? If we all decided tomorrow, you know what, let's just stop paying for our driver's license. There's no reason for us to ask permission from the government to drive. So let's just stop doing it. If there's safety in numbers. So for me to philosophically discuss with people and say, look, philosophically speaking, you shouldn't ask the government for permission to get married. You shouldn't ask them for permission to drive. You shouldn't ask them for permission to do anything. A corporation is permission to open a business. These are all things that, philosophically speaking, we shouldn't have to do. But people are still going to do them, at least in some degree for now. But that doesn't mean we can't discuss it philosophically and say, yeah, I recognize that this is, unfortunately for right now, the government uses a gun to make sure that I have a driver's license. So instead of getting killed, I'm going to submit and ask for permission to drive so that they don't kill me or they don't put me in a cage.
I don't understand how the government uses a gun to make sure you have a driver's license. Let me try to elaborate on that. You say things like the government uses guns to enforce things like a parking ticket, right? Well, the government is not using a gun to enforce a parking ticket. You're talking about something that could eventually escalate to violence. Well, then you don't need government for things to escalate to violence. Here's the thing, you get it.
Well,
no
one said that a life free of government is a life free of violence. Because there's always going to be violence. So there's the fallacy. Don't think that I'm trying to say that anarchy is the absence of violence. It is the absence of legitimized violence. It is saying that no violence is legitimate. All violence is immoral. Just because it's the government doesn't mean it can commit an act of violence, and that's okay. So, yes, every act that the government does, if the government fines me, that's violence. If I don't pay that fine, they're going to force me one way or another. Whether I put me in a cage, and they're going to use a gun to force me into that cage. If it wasn't for the gun, I'm not getting in the cage.
What I think you're doing is you're kind of like changing the definition of certain words because you're saying, anarchy gets rid of legitimate violence. But then you made a comment earlier saying that, self-defense, you don't consider violence. Well, if someone attacks me or invades my home and I shoot them to kill them in self-defense, whether or not it's self-defense or not, that's still a violent way to defend myself.
Well,
there's no such thing as shooting somebody non-violent.
Well, if you look at it, it can be justified
violence,
No. See, I think that's the way our society looks at it now, but I don't think that's really true. Violence is aggression. Defensive, if I'm defending myself, that's not violence. You're aggressing against me. I'm just blocking you. And I may have to kill you. This goes deeper into the philosophy because we could talk for hours on how much violence or how much self-defense is necessary. So if a guy comes at you with a knife, you may have to – if I have a gun, I may have to shoot him to stop him from using a knife. I may only have to shoot him in the foot. That might be enough to stop him from coming towards me to use the knife against me. If my neighbor's little girl is stomping on my flowers, obviously I'm not going to shoot her. Obviously I'm just going to go next door and tell her dad, your little girl is stomping on my flowers. I'd appreciate it if you told her not to do that. So that's a self-defensive action. It's not violence. It's a self-defensive action. So me shooting him in the foot is not violence because it's not aggressive. I'm not aggressively going after him. He's aggressively coming after me, and I'm stopping him. So that's why I'm saying I wouldn't even call that violence.
And at the end of the day, though, you're enforcing your personal law of invading your privacy by using force.
No, I'm enforcing my right to safety, to live. I'm enforcing my right to live. I'm exercising my responsibility to protect my own life or my family's life or my community's life.
By using force. So what I'm trying to say is every confrontation, whether it's not force.
I'm not forcing him to do anything.
You could – you can do. There's an alternative to that. You can sit there and let the burglar go in your house, take your stuff and leave, and never use force to protect your property. But I probably
would not kill a burglar. Unless by me trying to stop that burglar from entering my house, he decided he was going to try and kill me, I probably wouldn't kill a burglar. I would think me cocking my shotgun would probably be enough to send a burglar packing. And I would not,
And that is the equivalent of, not having a driver's license and being intimidated by the threat of a government gun to get a driver's license. Same thing as cocking your shotgun to let that invader know that, hey, you're overstepping your boundary. That's kind of like using intimidation.
But the difference is that I have the legitimate right to protect myself and my family and my property. The government does not have the legitimate right to tell me I have to ask permission to travel.
Well, if you don't believe that the government has a right to tell you to permission to travel, you have two options. You can, let people know how you feel.
I can travel without permission.
Here's what I was going to say. You can take up the cause of not needing a driver's license. Run for your local office on that platform, and if enough people think that that's a legitimate position to take, they'll vote you in. Or what you can do is you can leave the system and go somewhere else where you don't need permission to travel. But while you're
ultimately,
in the borders of the United
States.
But here's the problem, Dan. You live in the United States. You live within a government, within a system that's been set up for over 100 years before you were born. There are people in this country that are not going to want to abandon the laws just because, they might feel that, government force to you is immoral. And that's the point I'm trying to get. I don't disagree with you when I think that, violence is immoral. I don't disagree with that. I agree with you when I think that, under the constant threat of force by the police to get a driver's license, that's somewhat immoral. I don't disagree with you. But here's what I think that you go wrong, and here's my take on it. The government isn't enforcing you to get a driver's license with a gun. It's mutually accepted by the people that vote for politicians that make the traffic laws that you need a driver's license, bottom line, to drive on the roads. Whether you think it's immoral or not, the people have spoken, right? Now, if you get caught driving without a driver's license, there's a penalty for that. And a penalty is either you go – I got caught driving with a suspended license, and I got a summons to appear in court. No guns were drawn. No nothing. I there was no threat of violence. I got my
if
little
If you
ticket,
didn't show up at court, they would have sent the marshal
well,
to put you in chains and drag you to
if
court.
If I didn't show up to court, then that's a totally different crime altogether. Now I'm escaping accountability. And the point is that – if there are people that abide by the laws.
Accountability for what? Accountability for a law that the government had no right to enforce against you in the first place.
But they
do.
But they did.
Free person. No, they don't. You are a free person. You do not have to ask permission of the government to ride a horse, to drive a car, to ride a bicycle. It's illegitimate authority that they have.
They have every right to tell you how to travel as long as we give them that right to tell us. Like I said, if you want to run.
Well, I have not given them. I have not given them any right to tell me. You can submit to that authority.
The other 8 million people in New York City and the other 11 million people in New York State that vote for the governors and the mayors that decide what the traffic lines are, they
spoke to
you.
All those people don't have any power over me either. None of those people have any legitimate authority over me either.
But then you know what? Then how are you going to exist in any sort of community? I mean, you can go move to Texas with 20 people, and you can be the odd man out in that example you gave where, you know, the 10 adults will decide to band together and defend the community, and you got that one person that said, nah, I don't want to get involved. So how long is that community going to continue with 9 out of the 10 risking their lives to protect the community while one of them is not, you know, living up to their personal responsibility, but yet still enjoying the benefits of that protection? Let me give you a real-life example of anarchy and voluntarism at work. The Brook Farm was founded in 1841. It failed within 5-6 years. And the reasons why it failed is the same reasons why I've been bringing up. There were certain people that just weren't pulling their own weight. There was no mandatory work to be done. Everybody assumed certain responsibilities, but certain people didn't keep up, and they wanted all their place at the table. Of course, I'm paraphrasing, but you can just Google the Brook Farm and Charles Lane and all the early voluntarists that actually put, their practices into work, and they eventually ran out of money because they refused to do commerce with the outside world. They grew their own trees, they grew their own apple trees. One winter hit, in which agriculture did not produce as much as necessary to feed that community, and they were forced to do business with the outside world. The voluntarists were forced to compromise their beliefs. This is not something I made up.
There's no compromise. Wait a minute. There's no compromise in your belief to do business with the outside world. That's not a compromise of voluntarist belief. A compromise of voluntarist belief would be, interacting in some way with government.
Well, that's you are interacting with government. If you're in the Brook Farm and just selling something, and you go to a city in Boston or wherever, Philadelphia, and you go into town, and the law states that every time you trade your apples for something, there's a tax on the gain that you made. You're compromising your beliefs when you have to pay those taxes. That's the reason why they didn't want to assimilate or interact with the outside world, because they knew that commerce is regulated by the government, and if they did business, they'd have to pay taxes, and paying taxes wasn't something that's what they were trying to escape. So I guess the point is that, you know, if you're going to promote the anarchy, which I don't have a problem with anybody promoting anarchy. I just want to see it being implemented. I just don't see how it can be implemented at this point. The way I see it, and I'm 31, and, you know, all the scientific and biological studies show that I got about 46, 47 years on this planet, because the average life expectancy of a male in America is around 75, 76 years old. I don't want to spend the next 40-something years of my life fighting a winless battle, trying to get rid of my driver's license. I'd rather, do something that's going to actually yield results. Like, if I don't want to drive with a driver's license, I better make sure that I have every single justification covered as to why some lunatic who has no regard for the law and can drive drunk as much as he wants can still access the roads where my children drive. You know, I better be able to come up with some sort of justification to allow that person on the road without having a driver's license. Otherwise, nobody's going to hear me out. I would never get voted in.
There are two separate – wait. First of all, there's a conflation here going on. A person driving drunk and a person driving without a license are two completely separate things. The conflation you seem to be making is that the government makes sure by licensing people that they don't drive drunk. Obviously, that's not true because – people drive drunk all the time with licenses. So let's not stop making the false assumption that because you have a driver's license, you are committed to not driving drunk. That's not true.
Right, but there's a system of where you can take that license away.
So that person who didn't obey the law to drive not to drive drunk is going to obey the law to not drive without a license? That doesn't make any sense.
Well,
in a voluntarist society. In a voluntarist society, if there's somebody who insisted on driving drunk all the time and putting people in danger, then the other people in the community could say, listen, you're putting us in danger by driving drunk. We want you to stop doing it, or you really need to leave the community. And that person can say, well, fuck you. I'm going to stay in the community anyway. And then everybody else can say, okay, well, I'm the baker. I'm not going to sell you any bread. I'm the dairy guy. I'm not going to sell you milk and cheese. I make furniture. I'm not going to sell you any furniture. I have the gas. I'm not going to sell you any gas. And they can just all choose to not do business or associate with this person. And now this person has a choice. Either they can stop driving drunk, or they can move to a community that doesn't care that they drive drunk. That's how voluntarism works.
Right, and then at the same time, you know, people's lives get at risk. Now, here's the thing. Let's say the community gets together and say,
you know what?
Lives are always
at risk. You never hold on, wait. You never stop people's lives from being at risk. You'll never stop risk. So you can limit risk. Government doesn't limit risk. Government limits risk for the ruling classes in charge. Everybody else is just a pawn, so everybody else is at greater risk. You may feel safer because there are cops allegedly keeping you safe, but I think you should know by now, cops are not keeping you safe.
No, of course not. I don't disagree with any of that. The point of the matter is, here's the thing. You just said to yourself, you know, the threat of getting your license suspended isn't enough to keep people from driving drunk. So here's the thing. You got people that commit crimes, commit burglaries, commit felonies, and at the same time, there's a threat of government force against them to constantly remind them that what they're doing is wrong. Now, if you remove that threat of force, of enforcement, how would things get better? Like, people are already committing crimes and doing crazy things, even with the fact that, yes, there are police out there that will shoot you dead if they think that you're doing a crime. You know, to eliminate the police, to think that eliminating the police would somehow promote less violence, you know, and I think that's where people's misconception, and where I agree with the anarchists, where I don't think anarchy is complete chaos. I don't think that. But I think that people get the idea that anarchy is complete chaos because they see chaos every day, and there's a government in place that's supposed to keep order, and they still see disorder. So if you remove that order, you know, logic tells you that you can only get more disorder. Like, you know, you're not just going to, you know, get rid of the NYPD and then crime will cease because, you know, criminals are going to be like, well, hey, man, I was only committing crimes because it was fun to run from the cops.
I never argued that crime would cease. What the argument is, without an NYPD, I don't have to worry. I would rather go against any criminal that wants to come try and rob me than go against a militarized force that can come into my house, take my guns, disarm me, kill me, and get away with it.
But why are they coming into your house, disarming you, and killing you?
For whatever reason. Maybe because Maybe because I've become a political enemy of Bloomberg. Maybe because Michael Grimm doesn't like the fact that I follow him around with a camera and criticize him, and he decides he's going to call one of his buddies at the police department and say, hey, you know what? This kid, Danny Panzelli, he's an anarchist. He doesn't believe in gun laws. So he probably has some illegal guns. Why don't you go raid his house and, see what you come up with? And then they put me in jail for the rest of my life because whatever. I mean, if they found something, I'm not saying I have illegal guns. But I'm just saying this is an example of how and why innocent people go to jail. Because when you're an enemy of the system, or if you're black in New York City – you're brown in New York City. I mean, I'm not, but, you know, so right. But maybe some of my political enemies.
Well, you just brought up two names. You brought up Grimm and Bloomberg, both the douchebags, you know. You just brought up those two names. So when I asked you why are police running in your house, you brought up Bloomberg and Grimm. My question to you is, why the hell are they in office then? If you can't speak your mind and be anti-government without worrying about Bloomberg and Grimm, two scumbags sending police to your house, why the hell are they in office?
They're in office because they have paid for propaganda that convinces people that they're going to keep them safe.
And that's the point. The point is, you got, you know, if you shake off the propaganda and if you conquer the propaganda and those people get thrown out of office, I will put it like this. Here's how I can prove to you that government isn't all inherently evil. If I became mayor tomorrow, a lot of stuff will change. There would be no parking fines. Well, I can't say that because, you know, like I said, I wouldn't want people to abuse, you know, a system. Like, you know, if there's a fire hydrant there, no, I don't want people thinking they could park there in case there's a fire, yada yada yada. But what I would do is I would be malleable. I would bend to the will of the people that elected me. So if I have enough people saying, hey, you know what, we got parking fines, and I understand why we pay parking fines, but that parking fine over there in Highland Boulevard is bullshit. You know what I'll do as mayor? You know what? If you guys think it's bull, let's get rid of it. You know? Like, if I was mayor, a lot of things would change. No, a police officer would not get away with shooting an unarmed black kid. You know, the whole Trayvon Martin thing, no. You know, things would change. No, police wouldn't get away with shooting the dog. I wouldn't take the side of the cop that tased the guy in a wheelchair. You know what I mean? I wouldn't give
them the benefit of the doubt. I look at it logically. If you became mayor, a lot of things would change. If I became mayor, a lot of things would change. I'm pretty sure you know five people off the top of your head right now that you associate with every day that are anarchists, that if they got elected to mayor of New York City, a lot of stuff would change. So, you know, how can government be evil when if I put you at mayor, I know a lot of tyranny would end? I mean, the government can change. Government's behavior will change when the behavior of the person in office is different. You know, it's interchangeable.
That might be true. That might be true, but that does still not justify whatever tyranny is left. So you are saying, well, I'd be a much better mayor than Bloomberg, and maybe that's true. But you're still saying, well, I would still probably fine people and tax people for not parking the way I want them to park. So you're still admitting that you would be, using violence against people.
Well, no, it's not, Dan, it's not violence. Look, if I have a community, right, let's the first, how about this? I get rid of all parking fines, right? And the first time there's a fire, and the fire couldn't be put out, and a kid died because, you know, access to the fire hydrant was inhibited by a car. What are people going to look at the mayor as? You got rid of all these parking fines, and people are doing what they want because, you know, at large, the public just can't be trusted to just, you know, you can't even trust Debbie Rose to not block a damn fire hydrant, you know? So that accountability will roll up to the mayor. So I can understand why a mayor or a politician would want those laws enforced. You know, they don't want to be able to be looked at and say, hey, you know, a kid died because you just decided to get rid of the parking rules, and now there was a fire at a school. And some clown that, you know, some teenager that just doesn't have respect for anybody, you know, decided, hey, it's not illegal to park in front of the fire hydrant. You know, it's just that it could take that one time, that one tragedy where people will actually show up to a town hall meeting and demand that there be laws in place so people don't park in front of a fire hydrant. And then people will be demanding those laws. And, you know, you look at it as people being brainwashed and socially conditioned to want to be, you know, ruled by violence because they want to be able to put fines in place to park in front of a fire hydrant. But here's the way I see it. Normal people won't block a fire hydrant because it's just immoral. It's just a stupid thing to do. But then again, you know, you can't really depend on everybody to be normal and to be smart enough and to be considerate enough not to park in front of a fire hydrant. So we use fines and we use penalties as some sort of a deterrent to keep people from blocking fire hydrants. Now, this is coming from somebody myself who I think that if you park in front of a fire hydrant, you're a moron. And yet I parked in front of fire hydrants, and I got tickets for it. And in times where I was just running into the store to get something, or in times where I was running into my office and I thought I was only going to be 5 minutes, but I turned out to be a half hour and I blocked a fire hydrant, that was me being an idiot, and I'm acknowledging myself being an idiot, and I believe that you shouldn't block a fire hydrant. There are probably people out there that just don't even care. You know, they don't care about blocking a fire hydrant. Oh, what's the odds of a fire happening? I really don't give a crap. You know what I mean?
Dan, this hour and a half went really quick, and we have about 90 seconds left. So we're going to have to continue this another day. Thanks a lot for coming on. It was, I'm getting comments that it was an interesting discussion that we've been having. So apparently somebody appreciated our discussion, so that's good. Thank you, everyone, for listening to Ragamuffin Radio. That was Danny Roldan from he's a friend of mine from New York City. He now decided to take his he moved down to Florida where he's beginning his family. And so thanks for coming on, Dan, and wish you good luck. And please follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/ragamuffinradio if you haven't already. And check us out on Twitter at ragamuffinradio. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.